This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is Brightside Home Theater.
Happy Thanksgiving, home theater nerds! If you're listening to the AV Rant podcast or the HDTV podcast, don't touch anything. You clicked the right podcast, but this is a new and expanded home theater universe that you are now part of, and this is the first, hopefully annual, Infinite Home Theater podcast event. My name's DJ. I host the Brightside Home Theater podcast, and sitting around this home theater Thanksgiving table with all the fixins, like a giant OLED TV, 4K projectors, multiple subwoofers, Sony PS5, Xbox X, and everyone's favorite, some 4K discs with Atmos DTS:X. For cranberry sauce, we have 3D Blu-rays, and filling the role of the green bean casserole, we have a helping of HDMI 2.1. Sitting here with me from the HT guys, we have Ara the Woodman Dadarian.
Hey, how's it going?
We have Braden the podcasting multitasker Russell.
Hey, what's going on, everybody?
And from AV Rant, Tom, the man who puts the rant in AV Rant, Andre.
Good afternoon, everybody.
And Lee, if you follow him on Twitter, the Trigger Man Overstreet.
Hello, everyone.
And also from AV Rant, but pulling double duty as our MC, host, moderator, home theater, ticket taker, Rob, the nicest man in podcasting because he's Canadian, H.
Well, hello. Thank you very much for that very nice introduction, DJ.
You're welcome. And with that, I am going to pass the bucket of popcorn to him so we can get this thing going. Let's go.
Indeed. Yes. Welcome, everybody, to we're going to call this Thankful on Infinite Podcasts. You know, it's the crossover event, all of the multiverse worlds colliding here on one podcast together to say how much we're thankful this year for everything that's happened in the home theater and audio video world. We did have a listener of ours, Fred, give us an alternate title saying maybe we should call this AVers Assemble. You know, they're... After all, we got to give credit to DJ. Everyone should know DJ is the man who proposed this after speaking with each of us individually on his own podcast. And so, yeah, there was an idea. A man had an idea. Maybe not 10 years in the making, but we are all here. We are all assembled and we're going to have some fun. So, yeah, what I want to do is introduce the sort of concept that we came up with for this special crossover podcast, which is that each of our three podcasts focuses on a little bit of a different take, a little bit of a different slant approaching home theater and AV. The HT guys, they focus on features every single week, put together a really detailed, almost deep dive into a particular subject or a headline from that week. And their Thanksgiving episode traditionally has been what we are thankful for this year in regard to home theater and AV. So that is where we are going to start things this week. And no better person to start it off than the host of the HDTV and Home Theater podcast and his co-host. We're talking, of course, about Ara Dadarian and Braden Russell. So Ara, what are you thankful for this year?
Hey, Rob, thank you very much for that great introduction. And I just want to say one thing, Tom. You look like and sound like Bosch. Have you ever watched that show Bosch on Amazon Prime?
I have not, but I will.
I'm telling you, it's like I'm looking at the main character in Bosch, and you sound just like him.
Well, there
All
we
right.
Go.
So, what I am thankful for, I recently purchased an ultra short throw projector, and Braden and I, the first time we saw one is at CES, maybe 8 or 9 years ago. The thing was huge. And at the time, the price was about $150,000. I believe Sony put that out, Braden, or it could have been maybe a Chinese company. But regardless, I was able to purchase one for about $3,800, and it changed everything in my my theater room because I had a traditional type of projector. It was a JVC, a 1080p, a beautiful projector. But I wanted 4K, I wanted HDR, and then to get that type of projector, I would have to pull wire back through the ceiling because of the 4K. And you, it going that far, I would have to, you know, maybe even use HDMI over Ethernet. But then this ultra short throw projector came up, fantastic looking picture, and it works in broad daylight. So I can actually watch content in my family room. I could watch football games, baseball games during broad daylight. It is what I am truly grateful for.
I had a question just before we move on to Braden's pick, because along with that projector, you do need the right type of screen, like particularly if what you're saying, you're going to be using it in daylight. So I was curious what screen you actually went with to pair. It was the Optima, right, that you chose, the Cinema XP1?
Yes, it was the Optima, and the screen I have is a, I can't remember the name of it. I'll have to look it up.
But was it Elite Screens that you
went with? No, it wasn't Elite Screens. It was only about $650. And it was kind of cool when you look at from top down before I put it on the wall, it's black. But when you look from bottom up, it's white. So it's designed to reflect light that comes from below back at the viewing position. That's any cool light that comes from anywhere else just gets rejected. And that is why one of the reasons why it works during daytime. The other reason is, being very close to the screen, you don't kind of lose the brightness. It's like the lumens, if you had the same number of lumens from the back of the room, it would kind of get washed out going across the room. But being so close to the screen, it allows out all that brightness to reflect back at you. And if you give me a second here, I can look up the projector.
Well, while
screen.
You're doing that, well, I'll wait. Ask Braden. Braden, did you get a chance to ever see Aura's new projector in person, or has it been?
I haven't been over yet. No, every time we talk, Aura's like, "Man, you got to come over and check out the projector," and I just haven't had a chance to get over there yet. But it is on the list, and it's not because he didn't extend probably an infinite amount of invitations. It just hasn't happened yet. But no, I'm excited to go check it out for sure.
Right on. DJ, sorry, I cut you off. You wanted to say something there.
Nope. No, I just said, I don't know what I said. I'm good.
Just clearing
I'm listening.
His throat.
No?
That's all he does.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm in the front.
Hey, I'm DJ. Front. Don't forget about me. I'm DJ. This is like the AV Rant podcast. DJ's got a question again.
You want to hear my subwoofer story?
No, I do not. Thank you.
They've heard mine.
Oh, yours is coming up. We know that.
Tom's tired of mine.
Why don't we hop right into Braden's pick then? Braden, what are you thankful for this year?
Mm-hmm. I mean, the obvious one is sitting around hanging out with you guys, right? I mean, this is the first time that we've done this, so thankful for this whole thing being pulled together. And for the HT Guys listeners out there that were a little bit caught off guard by the fact that, you know, we didn't start the show normally, we are welcoming you into like a greater, wider, bigger experience. And people who haven't heard us before, hopefully you don't tune out just because of something stupid that I say. But what am I thankful for? So this year, 2020, I have been somewhat a nomadic, or my tribe has been somewhat nomadic, moving around from house to house. So I had to land on Roku as what I'm thankful for, because taking the Roku streaming stick, or actually a couple of them, around from every house that we ended up having to stay in allowed us to basically take all of our content with us. As long as the house that we were in had Wi-Fi, you know, all of my apps were there. Everything was there. Just plug the Roku streaming stick into the back of the TV. And it's almost like I could take my home theater around with me. You know, I would complain about the quality of the gear in the homes that we were staying in, but at least the apps were there and I was signed in and I had all my content. So I loved Roku, and trust me, like the equipment that you find in a traditional or a typical, home out there that's for rent. What are they called? The Airbnb homes for Airbnb. Rent is not great equipment. So taking your own Roku,
Tom,
with you
you're familiar with that, right?
Allows you to have a little bit of home as you cruise around. So 2020 Roku was my thing.
Yeah, nice. Brayden, I'm with you. I've been moving around a lot because of the renovations we've had to do on our kitchen, and took a Chromecast with us that it was just been sitting in the box, never used it, sat in the box. And then we started having to go to these different places, and you're right. It's just amazing to be able to plug it in and connect it to your phone again, and suddenly, boom, all your apps are there. Everything's connected. It does make things a lot easier. I agree 100%.
And I gotta ask you, Brayden, while you're over at any of these Airbnb places that you stayed, did you resist the urge to change the settings on their TV, or was that just an insurmountable downside that had to be corrected before you were able to watch?
I tweaked all the settings on all the TVs, man. Yeah.
I never hesitate.
All of them.
Very nice. So,
and I didn't even ask for permission. I just did it, man. That's how rebellious I was feeling.
Excellent.
You know, honestly, if you just set the picture mode to like movie or cinema, which they're probably never using, they'll never even know. You just put it back to dynamic before you leave and they're none the wiser. So, Ara, I'll give you the opportunity. I'm not sure you've been researching away your own screen choice. Has anything come up yet? Or
actually, it was an Elite. It was an Elite AEON. How do you say that? Eon ALR screen. So that's what it was.
All right.
I mean,
yeah,
it was either that or you were multitasking. So
I am multitasking. Yes, I am. That's what we do, Brayden.
You know, that's what we do.
That's what we
do. That was like when I heard that. So if you guys don't know the AV Rant guys, last week, Brayden was doing something and Ira was telling a story and he kind of made a joke, but Brayden just kept doing whatever he was doing. And then Ira called him on it. Which I'm at work. I'm listening. I am dying laughing because I'm like, that's like podcasting 101. Don't throw your partner under the bus. But he totally threw him under the bus. But you guys had already been making jokes all day.
No,
anyway,
I didn't throw him under the bus. Podcast. He was disrespecting me.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I can't tell you
so
my other
here's
podcast.
The deal. I wasn't even multitasking, though. I just didn't get a joke.
He just didn't think you were funny. That's right? The big problem there. It's like
it was like crickets, and I'm like, oh, man.
Uh-oh.
Once you've been podcasting for 15 years and you're the elder statesman in that experience, you're allowed to break the rules.
We are like an old married couple.
Yeah. I listen to my other podcast that I do with my buddy just to hear back what he said half the time, and I'm commenting on it. Because I'm like doing something in the background and he'll be commenting on a comic book, and I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. And then I'll be halfway through my response going, is this even right? I don't know.
That's it. Well, it goes both ways. There have been times Brayden says something and I will literally say the exact same thing. And he's like, dude,
right.
I just,
yeah, exactly.
All right. You're all experiencing the same thing that happens on radio shows. I can promise you. If you're listening to a radio show, they're doing the same thing.
You can't help it. You're multitasking.
Well, now that we've had a few words from DJ, it is DJ's turn. Normally, if this were the HT guys Thanksgiving episode, it'd be them, you know, bouncing back and forth, picking multiple things that they're thankful for. But we've got six people on this podcast. We're all going to weigh in with at least one pick, and it's DJ's turn. So Brightside Home Theater, 2020 has been a big year for you. What have you been thankful for in that home theater of yours?
Well, I took this question as overall, so I said projectors. That to me is the number one thing that I'm thankful for, going back to my roots in the 80s and looking at those Runco projectors and dreaming of these things that were so far outpriced for anybody. So back then it was, if you had a 32-inch TV, that was considered home theater. And now what we have with projectors just in general, bringing that real movie theater experience into the home. I can't tell you how many times I've told people, like, they're in the market to get a projector and they're like, what should I do? Tell me your budget, whatever, and just get whatever, the biggest thing you can get. And then we'll upgrade from there. I'll start them off with something good, but there's nothing like walking into a room and seeing like a 100-inch screen, 110-inch screen or bigger. That is going to blow everybody away. And what they've done with projectors, like Ira was saying with the, you know, short throws, and now it's the sky's the limit with that. And as Rob and I talked about a few weeks ago, maybe someday the cinemas will actually have the panels. And when that's the case, then it'll be cheaper for us at home to do the same thing on our walls. But for right now, to get that real cinema experience, there's nothing like a giant, giant screen.
Yeah, and there's been some really nice advancements just in the past year, getting frame-by-frame dynamic tone mapping added to a few models from JVC, LG, and Sony. So even on the HDR front, we're starting to get really, really nice images from projectors. Screen prices have come down from the days that DJ was talking about when he was looking at the Runco. So the whole package altogether really makes a whole lot of sense. Can't get a flat panel that's over 100 inches in size for like $4,000, which still a lot of money, but compared to what we were looking at in the past. And now at some point, we intend for all of us to try and actually see each other in person. We don't know when that's going to be, hopefully sooner than later, but, you know, one of these days, and I'm going to be very curious, DJ, what you think of, if you're able to get a look at something like, what Aura has, an ultra short throw projector in a, not totally pitch black room. I mean, for all of us, it'd be a fun experience, but,
yeah.
I think I think Rob just invited everybody over to your house.
Aura's house.
Next year, Thanksgiving at Aura's. So
honestly,
I thought you guys would be the best first location, the HT guys, because you guys are the closest together. Everybody else is spread out around the country.
So we don't want to find a central location like in Kansas or Oklahoma where we all go to in the middle.
No, because the weather in SoCal is always nice.
It is.
That is also true.
And I have a lot of bourbon.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Well, let's see. By my count, we've got 1, 2, 3 people who use projectors in their houses. Tom's got a projector. R's got a projector. DJ's got a projector. But then we've got Lee and myself, Rob, and we've got Braden. We're all stuck in flat panel land for the time being, aren't we? So it's a pretty balanced panel we've got here as far as weighing in on that.
See what you did there. Yes.
I did. I like puns, and so does Lee, because we all know that Lee is fond of that, and it's his turn now. So Lee, for people who might not be familiar with him, on AV Rant, Tom and I try to get together every week, but every once in a while one of us can't make it, and so Lee is our steadfast standby pinch hitter. He bails us out almost every single time, sometimes with like literally half an
just
hour's notice,
running into my office, jump on a microphone, turning on the computer as fast as I can. Yes,
I know the feeling.
Oh man, I do apologize. Yes, the texts and the tweets fly out furiously sometimes from AV Rant Land. But yes, Lee, we're going to give you the opportunity to be the first speaker from AV Rant. What have you been thankful
for? First of all, I just want to say I'm thankful for this. This is fun doing this kind of podcast with you guys, and I'm also very excited. I've been listening to R and Braden for a long time, and so even though I know Tom and Rob really well now, I don't know them, and so my brain thinks of them as like famous. You know, like, I'm like, oh, wow.
That's absolutely nowhere near the truth.
It's Aura and Braden. Look, everyone. And you guys, for some reason.
Imagine my feeling.
Yeah, right. You guys look like I pictured you. I'm really proud of my brain for just inventing. Yeah, that's how you look in my head. It's great.
I didn't picture the handlebar.
Before you go on, Lee, I got to tell you a story. I had to go and get a medical procedure from a doctor. These are things that happen when you get in your 50s.
I'm there.
So imagine imagine which medical procedure this was.
Thank you for that. I'm meeting this doctor,
and he says, "Your name sounds familiar." I go, "Yeah, it's probably interesting because I don't have a very common name." And he says, "Do you do a podcast?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And so the guy who pretty much did the procedure knew me already. I'm there for a for a consultation, and he's asking me about home theater stuff that he wants to put in his house.
Yeah, you guys are funny, man. A few years ago, Aura couldn't make it on the show for some reason, so I had a couple of my boys fill in, and they went to school, and the next day, a bunch of their friends were coming up to him going, "Hey, is your dad do a podcast? Because my dad said he thinks he heard you on a podcast yesterday." So
I remember that when the boys filled in. So I literally have been listening to you guys. I know what TVs you like, and I know about Aura's woodworking and speaker building, so it's very fun. And supposedly I'm going to be on DJ's show sometime soon.
Very soon.
Okay, great. That's
Actually was supposed to have happened, but things.
Oh man, we'll get there. But yeah, eventually I'll fulfill my potential as like America's podcast substitute, and I'll just be on as many as possible. But anyway, let's talk about the hardware that if I don't say SVS subwoofer right here, then Tom and Rob will murder
you're fired.
Me. Absolutely. I'll never be on
as many S's as there were in that. You left one off because there should have been an S at the end of that word subwoofer.
I did drink an adult beverage earlier. SVS subwoofers. Don't ask me to say the name. I think I have I think I have an SB2000 Pro, and I have two of them.
That is.
There we go. My goodness, that makes all the difference in the world. And I knew intellectually it would. Like, we had a whole episode where we talked about this, and I knew it would make a difference, but I didn't realize just how much better it'd make the whole experience and how much more realistic everything would sound. So if you're out there with just some big, boomy, tall tower speakers and you think, I don't really need a lot more bass. You need a lot more bass. So get a good quality subwoofer. Absolutely. And, OLEDs, LG OLEDs, that is the best TV there is, right? I mean, OLED, at least the panel technology, is as good as it gets. And as someone who, ever since the late 80s, hates a bad black level, I don't like a gray washed out picture. I never have, or when I'm taking pictures, even back when it was on film. So, you know, I had a plasma before this and an OLED now, and a 65-inch screen with my face 9 feet away, that ain't bad. And it is reasonably affordable. We had to penny pinch a little bit to get there, but, it's been wonderful. And then I wanted to mention like two rando little small things, because sometimes it's the little things, that the convenience things, that makes all the difference, either in a home theater or in your car or whatnot. The little USB port on the car stereo. I love that. Does that sound ridiculous? I don't like messing with Bluetooth so much and screwing with my phone while I'm in the car, but I take a little USB stick and I fill it up with whatever I want to listen to, pop that in there. I love it. I know it sounds ridiculous, but just having that, I'm thankful for that. And then finally, in my kitchen, I have two little Bluetooth speakers, and they're made by Canto. They're the YU4 Canto Bluetooth speakers, and they have a plethora of connections. I use them all the time. I listen to Spotify in there because we cook a lot. I'm standing in there a lot, and it's just been a blast. I didn't realize how much fun it would be to have quality speakers in there. I had little dinky computer speakers in there before, but those are wonderful. So, you know, treat yourself, y'all. If you're listening somewhere unusual, get some good speakers and put them in there. So those are my, that's my list of hardware.
So I've got two SVS subwoofers sitting in my garage getting ready to be put in. I'm currently without a home theater, right? Cause they're still trying to put the house back together. Oh. But yeah, there's two SV2000s.
Yes. Get them.
Sitting in the garage waiting to go
hook
in.
Up. You're so gonna love them. You're gonna love them.
When Ara and honestly, I first met, we debated on whether or not the center channel or the subwoofer was more important in your home theater.
Who said the subwoofer?
One of our early audio debates. Person. Do you remember that, Ara?
Yeah, I do. And I was against subwoofer. I thought if you had a full range speaker, you can get enough bass out of it. And then I saw the light.
Yep. Honestly, the very easy question amongst this panel will be, who here doesn't use SVS subwoofers? Because I think it's only one of us.
Really?
Who would that
is
be?
Is it? Ara?
Ara, you use an HSU, don't you?
I have SVS as well.
You have SVS as well? Okay, there you go.
Nope. Oh, different rooms. There we go. Mind you, in different rooms. I have two systems, one in my family room and one upstairs. The upstairs one, where the projector is, does have the HSU or a SU. And that sucker just rocks the house. The one downstairs, I didn't get the bigger subwoofer. I got their sealed subwoofer. Their smaller one is $500. But I added bass shakers to my couch, and that was a great hybrid. So I do have a little bit of actual bass, but then a lot more coming through the actual shaking of the couch.
Boys. Ah,
who's got the biggest SVS subwoofers? Is it moi?
It's you.
It what do you be. Have?
Probably, yeah. Now,
I got dual PC-13 Ultra.
Listen to Rob.
what would now be the 4000 series?
It's the PB-2000. Lineage.
All right, I win. And I've got the smallest room.
Right. He does have the smallest room.
And
as
he's
well.
The deafest.
The smallest room.
Well, so what do you have, those turned up to 0.5?
The volume dial goes between 0 and 100, and they're at 4.
So,
you know.
So, yeah.
I think I've got some headroom. Yeah. It should be
it's
okay.
Actually less
it should be
than
safe.
0.5.
Hey. Well, Tom Andry over here has been biting his tongue because there's been comments by Lee and there's a comment by the HT guys, and it's Tom's turn now. I don't know if he wants to address that first or just tell us immediately what he's thankful for.
No, first, it's, you know, for those of you that don't listen to the podcast, welcome. And it's nice to meet all of you. I do want to say that Lee, as he sits there on his high horse pontificating about the glory of subwoofers, I want to let you guys know it was at least 2 years of me berating him that he did not – that his monster Yamaha speakers were not going to be enough bass, and him arguing with me vehemently that I was wrong and I had no idea what I was talking about and they weren't just enough and and just have him –
I don't know if I argued. I just said I thought it was
just
good enough.
It's so sweet.
Yeah. Hey.
To hear this.
I know what he wants.
Like,
listen, guys, I know what he wants. He wants me to say it again. Tom, you were right.
Thank you.
That's what he wants.
Do it with my wife's
There's
voice,
something
please.
He could be thankful for.
I thought in that podcast, you guys did a great job of holding the suspense on whether he was going to keep both. Because you held on to that, and it was like, for the longest time, and I'm doing my lawn, and I remember going, is he keeping both? He's got to keep both. You can't send one back.
I like that that's a cliffhanger.
You dragged that
in our
out
world.
Perfectly, like a Hitchcock film.
That's right. That is Lee's review yes. of his dual SBS right. yeah. SP 2000 right. Pro subwoofers. If anybody would like to check it out, avrant.com.
Keeps you on the edge of your seat.
That's right.
Like, will
oh,
yeah. the second
it's
one
the
not.
Longest commercial ever. But
it's a 2-hour commercial. Yeah, our podcast goes on and on, guys. I'm sorry. If you like to work out to a podcast, you're going to want to stretch ours out over a couple of sessions or
you're going
to
get jacked if you work out to yeah. that podcast.
All right. So. Things I'm thankful for as far as hardware is concerned, it's there's a lot out there to be thankful for. Since the HD guys have been doing this every year, they're kind of focusing on this year. I, on the other hand, since this is my first time, I'm going to take a little liberties and talk about some of the gear and things that are out there that have made the most impact on my HT or home theater and AV experience. And the first thing I would have to talk about, of course, would be sound absorbers or, room treatments, wall panels, whatever you want to talk. You know, first of all, they're very important. We talk about it all the time on our podcast about how important it is for your room to get treated. But for me personally, I decided when I got my first real system that I would do some panels, and I made the panels myself, and I am not very handy. And that still is true to this day. I'm still not very handy, but I decided to write an article about it and pitched over at audioholics.com. So I wrote a 2-part article called The DIY Absorbers for the Less Than Handy Man. And I got that published over there, and that began my journey in the world of AV. And I wrote for Audioholics for 8 years, and it was a great experience. You know, loved being part of the industry. Met Ara and Braden at CES 1 year. I think I was so exhausted I couldn't even hardly open my eyes to look at you guys, but we did meet, and I was like, yeah, okay, guys, good. I'm going to write some more. Because we did like two hours of sleep and 22 hours of writing while we were at CES. So that is a very important part of my personal experience. But unfortunately, you know, Braden kind of took one of mine, which was this idea of these streaming devices that you can take around. And of course, SVS subs and other subwoofers are also very important to me. But I think more important than anything else that's happened for me, and I think in AV, has been the Harman white paper. Now, that came out a couple of years ago, but it
more than a couple.
Fundamentally changed, well, you know, a couple rounded. It fundamentally changed how we understand how bass works in your room. And we went from, you know, basically guessing and hoping and doing things like the subwoofer crawl, which we still suggest sometimes when you have a single subwoofer, but to understanding that if your room fits in within certain parameters, mathematically we can predict where the best place for your subwoofer is regardless. And it works because of math. And that right there fundamentally changed how I look at subwoofers, how I react to subwoofers, and how well they're implemented in rooms. And going back to what R and Braden were talking about when they were arguing about what's the most important speaker in your system, the subwoofer or the center channel. It's not the center channel, but at the time that they were, because we've been doing this for so long, R and Braden's been doing it even longer than I have, and at the time, that was a legitimate argument because we really didn't know how to integrate subwoofers. And if you place a subwoofer incorrectly, it can destroy your experience. It can really mess up how things sound in your home theater. And the fact that the Harman white paper came out and started to make these things clear to us, I think made the biggest difference as far as me really understanding that we're progressing. You know, for so long, we've been arguing like, is a Denon warm or a Yamaha cold or a, you know, whatever, these amplifier questions that seemed, you know, more subjective than objective. And here we had something that was objective, concrete, that we could hold on to and really improve people's home theaters substantively through the application of math. So that's the one I'm going to go with.
I mean, I still think the subwoofer crawl is fun in the same way that, hey, meet me on the seventh green at 11 o'clock at night, and that's when the sprinklers come on, is fun, right? Just imagine people crawling around in their theaters to find the right spot for the subwoofer. I just think it's fun. So,
well, I mean, and there's so much, you know, there's so many, like, wives, I call them, like AV wives tales that are out there. You know, the people have been saying it so long that they just keep saying it. Like, it's been on ABS forum for so long that people are like, oh, yes, you know, when you do the subwoofer crawl, you know, play your favorite bass heavy track. And we're like, no, that's not really what you should do anymore. But, you know, we're, you know, all AV Rant does is try to make sure that people are getting the right information. I know you guys do the same thing. So it's good that we're all together and fighting the same good fight.
Well, I alluded to it earlier that I've got a very small room. It's approximately 11 feet by 12 feet. The ceiling isn't even a full 8 feet. It's the den in my apartment, and my apartment isn't that big. So naturally, once you have a room that size, the only logical way to think of how to proceed is to have a full 9.2.6 system, because anything less can't really cope with a room that size, you know?
Right.
It's got to be in there. So I'm really thankful this year that we've got some new pre-pros that have hit the market, as well as new AV receivers now that have brought the ability to get to 15 speakers and more than one subwoofer down to a price that is still expensive but not completely astronomical. It's no longer five figures like it used to be. So Mono Price's HTP1 is the first one. It's a $4,000 pre-pro, so you will need, you know, 15 external amplifiers and amps built into your subwoofers, as we would expect. But, you know, that really nailed a lot of things. I love that pre-pro. I wish I could own it right now. I gotta save up a little bit for $4,000 US, me being a Canadian and the exchange rate and ship cross-border shipping. But what I love that they did there is, normally it's difficult to upmix all of our content that is not already encoded as Atmos and DTS:X with objects, that could potentially use all 15 speakers. If you want to upmix all of our 5.1 and 7.1 content, to actually do that into 15 speakers wasn't really possible. The Dolby Surround up mixer will never put any sound into front wides. There's some rumor that that might be changing, but as we're saying this right now, it is the case the Dolby Surround up mixer never put sound into front wides. And then the DTS Neural X up mixer was limited to 11 speakers total. It couldn't go beyond that. So now we've got DTS X Pro and the DTS Neural X Pro up mixer coming out. That should be able to expand to all 15 speakers. But Mono Price, before all of that, said, hey, we can upmix to 11. That's no problem. Why don't we just matrix the sounds that would go into the wides and matrix the sounds that would go into the top middle speakers above us? They did that in their own processing, and that for sure works. Don't have to wait for a firmware update. Don't have to rely on some, you know, Dolby or DTS potentially upgrading things, and who knows if it'll really work until it does. They've got that processing right now. They also implemented Dirac really well, and something that Dirac doesn't have that I wish it had was curves of equal loudness, which is, you know, if you're listening at full reference volume, no problem, but most of us turn the master volume dial down at least a little bit. And when you do, some sounds, particularly in the deep bass, can become inaudible or just not as loud as they really should be amongst the rest of the mix. So curves of equal loudness make sure that the proper equalization is applied, and they rolled their own. Again, because they're like, hey, Dirac doesn't have it built in, we'll roll our own. So along with that, I was really happy with Outlaw's new Model X 5000, or Model 5000X. Let's get the numbers and letters the right way around. That's bringing, you know, XLR inputs to a five-channel amplifier, 120 watts per channel, $750. You know, it's usually over $1,000 for something like that. You gotta like it. And lastly, Anthem, brand new, just came out, their whole new lineup. They've got their MRX 1140 AV receiver now, can do 15 speakers and two independent subwoofers. So, you know, pretty amazing that that is out there. And being a Canadian, Anthem's in a Canadian company. They gave us quite the price break. If you're down in the States, it's $3,700 for that AV receiver. It's $4,000 Canadian. I'm like, that's a heck of an exchange rate. It's pretty awesome. I might have to go for it.
Buy me one.
Nice.
While you're at it.
Yeah.
Since it's so cheap.
Nope.
Yeah. No. And by the way, Rob will tell you it's not the center or the sub that's most important. It's the front wides.
Front-wise. You know what? I'd be lying if I didn't tell you that Monoprice in some way hasn't shown up on a bunch of our Thanksgiving lists over the years. Monoprice is a phenomenal, phenomenal company. And they've been doing great things ever since, you know, we just went there for, you know, low price. I don't want to say cheap, but low price cables all the way through what they have now. Yeah. Monoprice is awesome.
Yeah. And we're lucky. Monoprice is local to us. They have a warehouse. Right. I believe it's in Rancho Cucamonga. Oh, and Braden and I were there one time. Or no, you know what? No, it was for Olevia.
That's a real place.
Rancho Cucamonga. Sure. Yeah. I used to live right near there. I used to live in Claremont.
Just I lived in Rancho Cucamonga for many years.
I thought
years.
My dad was kidding.
No, it's a real place.
No, it's a real place.
Hey, gosh, that sounds like yet another reason we should all meet down in California.
Exactly. That's what I was going
to
say until he
came
out
with
Rancho Cucamonga.
You know, Rob, to go back to what you're saying about prices, think about how much the prices have come down on everything. Braden and I usually around Christmas time will have a like our home theater in a box that we create the box instead of just buying the home theater in the box. For what I paid for my TV back in like 2004 or 5, whenever it was, I can get an entire home theater system with good products. Not just my first Yamaha home theater in a box system had plastic speakers. Oh. So that gives you an indication. And I was happy to have it, to be honest with you.
Probably some 22 gauge wire thrown in.
Oh my
too,
goodness.
Right?
Oh. It was terrible, but it was great too because I had surround and I was excited about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's what we get for the dollar now is incredible compared to what we used to spend. Braden, your first enhanced definition TV, not even HD TV, but that plasma you had that I remember coming over and watching a baseball game at your house because ESPN was the only thing that had high definition at the time. I was amazed by it, and that wasn't even HD.
Yeah, it was 480p.
Wow.
And it was ridiculously expensive, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
I remember the enhanced definition and Dolby Pro Logic 2, and I was like, my impetus for wanting all of that was the Nintendo GameCube. Because it, you know, you could optionally order some component video cables and output 480p with Dolby Pro Logic 2 audio. And that kicked everything off for me.
Well,
speaking of cables, do you remember how many cables our systems used to have now?
Yeah.
We just have HDMI and that's it. I bought, you know, an Oppo Blu-ray player. And in order to get Dolby True HD, I had to run RCA cables out to the my receiver because that was the only thing that can decode it was the player itself. And I had just a rat's nest of wires back there. And now it's just some HDMI cables and power. That's it.
I still manage to have a rat's nest. It doesn't make any difference how many.
Oh, yeah.
No matter what I do, it's always a rat's nest.
It just keeps
nest.
Happening. Yeah.
AV Rant guys, imagine how much longer your podcast would be if you were going over the properties of each individual input, whether you went with, you know, composite, component, super video, digital, be like, well,
when this podcast
every
started,
listener
we did
calling
do that.
Or writing in.
HDMI is bad enough these days.
Yeah.
I mean, well, who among us here, though, doesn't still have a box, probably a pretty sizable one somewhere that is filled with cables? I certainly have one.
I actually just got rid of a bunch.
I've got seven.
I have a whole.
Do you have to e-waste, recycle them, or how do you get rid of them?
Put them at the bottom of the trash bin.
Yeah, there's an e-cycle program. I have a whole closet that still has my old radio stuff
in
it. So it's I could do a radio show if you hand me a transmitter. I've got a closet full of enough stuff to do that, including like a XLR snake cable where you can hook up 16 things in one bundled cable. Oh, yeah. I know about those boxes.
I've got four boxes in my garage. One is speaker cable. One is just HDMI cables. One is random video cables from years gone past, you know, like huge long component video cables from like Blue Jeans, you know, the ones that have like the massive garden hose.
Oh yeah.
Thing. And then the miscellaneous one, which is all the weird connectors and stuff I had to
and
buy over the years.
And when you need a cable, what do you do, Tom?
What's that?
I said, and when you need a cable, what do you do?
Amazon.
Well,
you go buy another one.
Order it on Amazon. Yeah.
More often than I would like to admit, I do that. But
so I have those four boxes, but they're just not organized that well. All four of them are miscellaneous cable boxes. Right? Like I just
remember I have a fifth box
right
out there too. Yeah. I have a fifth.
Do
one.
Any
I
of you have
boxes.
Speaker cables where the sound has to go in one direction?
Those are the special ones. Don't worry. Those are the good ones.
Not speaking.
I had a friend buy those. I had a friend buy those with the arrows on it. Do it this way or it'll be ruined. The electrons get really mad if they go that way.
The sound comes out in reverse, man. It's all controlled, you know?
You'll hear all the devil messages on your music if you do it that way. You flip your cables or if you want to hear the Christians.
Now, I just recently got rid of a drawer, a little plastic drawer that was nothing but IDE ribbon cables, if anybody works on computers.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, I remember
IDE
those.
Ribbon cables. So I also used to fix computers for years, so I do know about these boxes of cables.
This is a weird flex that we are all.
Yeah, right. We're all just trying to outdo each other.
I'm not sure what this is.
We're pack rats.
You remember when we first started the punch cards, guys? What was it?
Braden, when we first started the podcast, we bought a device so we can do recordings out in the field. And it was probably about a $400 or $500 device. And within about 6 months, it became obsolete because we could record on our iPhones.
That's right.
And iPhone quality was just as good, if not better, than that device did. And I still have the device. It just hasn't been used in probably 14 years.
Well, now that we have discussed what we've been thankful for hardware-wise in our computers, we're going to transition. We're still going to stick with what we're thankful for, because that is the overarching theme of this episode coming out on Thanksgiving. It all makes sense. But DJ's podcast, the Bright Side Home Theater podcast, if you're not familiar with it, what he does is he picks something that he has actually watched in his theater every single week and basically breaks it down. He sometimes goes literally scene by scene to talk about things that he notices, the audio and video quality in particular, but also the movie as a whole and some behind the scenes stuff. He profiles people's theaters.
It's much more interesting
listeners.
Than Rob's describing, just in case you're wondering. It's much better than that.
Am I doing that bad a job of it?
Actually, I thought that was more interesting.
Like
I want to listen to that
3000,
one.
Right? He's just watching the movie and kind of like pop-up video. Yeah. Where you know, the podcast while you're watching the movie.
He goes through frame by frame and analyzes each frame.
I don't know if you guys are
Go
noticing.
Along with
this
journey with DJ as he is slowly analyzing each frame. It's a 17-hour podcast twice a week.
Now, if you remember how Beavis and Butthead watched music videos, it's that.
Yeah. Every time I tell somebody my what it's about, like friends, they're like, oh, so like Mystery Science Theater 3000? I'm like, yes. But from a home theater perspective. It's, well, but yeah, I get that a lot, Braden.
We are going to take his inspiration and roll right into what we're thankful for software-wise. These are the movies, TV shows, and or music albums that we've been thankful for this year. So, you know, no better person to start off this segment. It's his segment, if we're being honest. DJ, sir, what have you been thankful for software-wise in 2020?
Well, I have to go with Star Wars. Anybody that's listening to my podcast knows it's Star Wars. And when I say Star Wars, I don't mean any, like, the franchise. I mean A New Hope. And it's always called Star Wars. I saw it in the theater. My dad took me to see it. And ever since then, I've wanted to just recreate that night. That was the first movie he ever took me to. And then the nerd in me in the 80s took over and I started to read up on it in a lot of the behind the scenes stuff and what George Lucas did and then learning about how he changed the theater going experience and how he forced cinemas into getting the 70 millimeter. So, you know, that you had to have Dolby surround to get the 70 millimeter cut. And as you know, we all know, like 95% of the population could care less between the 70 millimeter, the 35 millimeter and watching it on their iPhone. Mm-hmm. They don't care. So, but for us and for that small percentage, he forced that. And I think an argument can be made that he is the birth of home theater. Because I think a lot of people are trying to recreate what we're getting in the theater and him advancing that. It's just huge to me. And the first scene I'd like to touch. No, I'm just
And off we go.
And you'll notice in frame 874.
Right. If you'd pause it right here. No, but I always go to for a scene. I always go that lightsaber scene. When Luke lights that lightsaber for the first time. And that's not real. I broke it down last week. Well, as we're recording this, it was a few weeks ago as it comes out, but I broke it down and there's some, you know, you're in Obi-Wan's hut, which is like a clay cave, But you can hear in that scene, you hear all these electronics going. It sounds like ceiling fans, computer fans are going. And it wasn't until just then that I realized, I'm like, this is kind of crazy because you're in a cave, but you're getting all of this technology going on in all of your surrounds and your overheads. But then, of course, Luke lights that lightsaber and quite literally is the first time a lightsaber was lit on screen. And I mean, as a little kid, you know, we made that noise in the playground. You know, it's Lee's got his hands up. Yay!
Oh yeah.
Actors today who managed to get onto a Star Wars movie or TV show, they always tell a story of how they have to stop themselves, actively think and stop themselves from making the noise with their mouth when they're
right.
actually waving
does,
a lightsaber.
Does anybody
on?
Remember Star Wars Kid?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
100%. Yeah.
That was that guy making those sounds.
Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Was that you, DJ?
No.
Early career as Star Wars Kid.
Yeah. No,
that
was
so
me.
Funny.
Yeah. So that to me is like that. I mean, it's literally why I'm here. It got me into home theater. It's the movie that anytime I get a new piece of equipment, it is the first movie, absolutely first movie that I'll play. I've actually had a case where I couldn't find it. I can't start. They're like, oh, you've got all these movies. Just put some, I can't. It's like, gotta net it yourself.
Well, I think we can all agree that finally Star Wars, A New Hope is truly complete now that we have McClunky. That finally, yeah. we were all thinking it for, you know, the past 40, 50 years.
I am never watching
that. You know, just something was missing in that scene. And George finally got it in there before he sold it off to Disney. McClunky, it's complete. We all feel good about it.
Have you not seen the new cut, Tom?
I am not watching the new cut, no. I've got the original trilogy on VHS, and I'll watch that before I watch that new cut.
You might be impressed.
It's an interesting observation you make, DJ, around Lucas being the grandfather of home theater, right? And I hadn't ever thought about that, but with his, you know, THX and you know, certifications and everything else, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Between him and Spielberg, because Spielberg did the same thing with Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
For DTS though,
you're just teasing all kinds of things here, DJ.
Yeah,
because we're going from one Star Wars property to another. Yeah. Lee has clued us in what his first pick's going to be, what he's been thankful for this year, and yeah, it's part of the Star Wars family,
oh, yeah.
No question.
Mandalorian, and what I put on the list is that it finally made Star Wars good again. Because I'm a fan of the first movie and, the second, you know, so I'm talking about New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. And then I have quibbles with everything after that, right? And, you know, just when you think it's going to be good, it gets stupid again. But, Mandalorian, the first season blew me away. I'm two episodes into this second season. I'm slightly worried, getting a little silly. We'll see what happens. Don't anybody spoil. I'm only two episodes in. I'm like, oh, that set looks a little fake. We'll see what happens. But that first season especially just blew my mind. And of course, with the new subwoofers and the TV, it was a wonderful experience. Also for me, I'm a giant science nerd going way back, and the Cosmos series, which originally was Carl Sagan, and I own that on DVD. And now they've redone it. I love little nerdy science things, and it's got good audio, really good audio this season, by the way. If you tune in and watch Cosmos, was that Fox now?
They're on to third season.
Yes, this
now?
Is now technically the third season, second new season. And I don't know. I just was struck by the audio. So if you have a home theater and you like science nerdy things, it's so good. Also, I will say Hamilton on Disney Plus, because first of all, it makes my wife incredibly happy. And that's incredibly important. But also, I like history. I was a history minor in college, and a fan of some rap music as well. So Hamilton, very, very good. If you haven't seen it, watch it. And then I like things like Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. He researches, and he's funny as hell, and that's my kind of thing. So there's stuff. I've watched a lot of other things, but those are the first four that came to mind.
Last Week Tonight, that's HBO? Or what?
Last Week Tonight, that's HBO, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of comments on that, because Hamilton is significant not just for the content itself, but also the way it was distributed this year. It was intended to be a theatrical release. Don't have to tell anybody in the year 2020 in case somebody is watching this some far distant future. I think history will record that there was a little bit of an event going on in 2020 that kept all of us at home, kind of made it a case that there was no better time to have a home theater. And here comes Disney Plus, a relatively new streaming service this year. And Hamilton releasing on that was a significant event.
How about that?
Event.
Two of my things were Disney Plus. I didn't really think about that. But yeah, the audio and video is impeccable. And Disney Plus must have a higher bit rate than others. It looks really good.
You know, while
Disney owns all the content, so I think you'll be hard pressed to go through this list of software and not come up with something Disney. But
Yeah, during the lockdown when internet service providers and streaming providers were limiting the bandwidth they were setting out, there was a spell there where Hamilton was the only piece of content on Disney Plus still streaming in Dolby Atmos and Dolby Vision. They had clamped down on the bitrate on everything else and were reducing it, but Hamilton came out and they're like, yeah, this gets the full quality.
It's so, really, really good.
That was a nice thing to watch at that time. Also wanted to mention on that second season of The Mandalorian, you pointed out how some of the sets are not looking quite as realistic as perhaps the first season. This was one of the things where it's a little bit of damned if you do, damned if you don't, because when the first season came out, and they're using this amazing, gigantic LED screen with real-time rendering of the backgrounds, and so they're actually recording it. It's not green screen. The light is actually there. That's why the reflections off of his shiny chrome suit actually work. But they limited it to 200 nits. It's in Dolby Vision, but it maxed out at 200 nits. And there were people online saying, it's fake HDR because you're not using 1,000 nits. So this season, they bumped everything up to 400 nits plus, and now you can kind of see that the backgrounds aren't as realistic because they're just a little too bright. So, you know, don't always call things out for, you know, not going up in just sheer numbers. It's not always the best result. So DJ already alluded to this. Tom's favorite pick for software is a pretty consistent thing as well. And steadfast pick for what he enjoys in his home theater.
Right. So there's a lot of stuff that I play over and over again in my home theater. There's a lot of movies that see a lot of repeats. Of course, Star Wars is very influential in my life. One of the first movies I ever saw more than once in the theater. I remember the first time we saw it, we arrived late. So it was back long enough ago, obviously, that we just stayed and watched the beginning of the next one. You know, just stayed through the break before they would kick you out like they do now. But one of the most influential pieces of, software, you know, media in my life, of course, was the original Jurassic Park released on VHS and widescreen. I've told this story before on other podcasts, but as well as my own, is what had happened was I was at home, I had bought it, I was watching it on my 28-inch, you know, CRT, and had just finished it, and a friend of mine showed up and said, oh, what you got there? And I said, oh, the widescreen of, oh, you should come watch it at our place. I'm like, I just watched it. He goes, no, man, you gotta come watch it at our place. And they had a much bigger TV, but it was still CRT, so it couldn't have been bigger than 36 inches. But they had surround sound and they may not have had subwoofers. I think they did, but they worked, and this is in Southern California. There used to be a place called, Good Guys or something like
good
that.
Good Guys, yeah.
Yeah, Good Guys. They worked there, so they got all their equipment on discount. So they had tower speakers and subwoofers and surround sound, and I was like completely blown away. And that moment started my long trek into home theater. So it's not too hard for me at least to recognize where I got my start. But there's other things that have also made a big influence on me. Diana Krall, her music is not something that I would normally listen to myself. It's not my... You know, I like jazz, and I like female vocalists, but her attention to detail and other artists of her ilk who have that attention to detail as far as how things are recorded and making sure you get that really pristine recording is it's a niche thing these days, because now people are more worried about bit rates and stuff as if that indicates quality. But she's more worried about actually getting very good quality. And those artists that do that, I think, are keeping alive a tradition that we all need to respect and support. Also, Blue Man Group is a good thing. Something I just personally enjoy, and it's something that I can get other people to watch with me in order to have them experience surround sound music. So I have some DTS recordings from them and Blu-ray recordings from them that are also very, very good. For testing purposes, one of the bands that has made the most impact on me has been Yellow. And you don't know who Yellow is, because you, no one would purposely listen to this music. It's terrible. But, you know the song, Oh Yeah, from, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Dun, dun, oh yeah. That song? That's Yellow. Okay. And that is the most singable song they have. Okay. Everything else is just weird. And, but it has all these pans and weird things in this two channel music that you're able to do a lot of testing with. So, like, you know, you'll go to somebody's house and they're like, oh, you want to listen to some music? I'm like, yeah, I brought a CD. And I stick it in. They're like, why are we listening to this? I'm like, shh. It's 14 seconds in. There's a pan. I just got to listen to this pan real quick. And we'll see whether or not your speakers suck. They're like, wait, what? So, you know, that's an important one for me. And kind of echo what Braden said earlier, you know, about having the streaming services that you can take around with you. Netflix, I was there when, you know, I got the discs and they started streaming, and I had a device that I had in for testing for Audioholics that allowed me to attach to get Netflix into my home theater. And it was one of the only ways you could do it back then other than hooking up a computer to it. And it was awful. I mean, it was just not good. There wasn't very much stuff on it, and nothing that was on it you would want to watch, but they stuck with it. And here we are today. With, you know, competing streaming services and us talking about bit rates and what's got Atmos and what has Dolby Vision and all that stuff. And, when I know Ara and Braden will remember people asking us over and over again, you know, do you think they're ever going to be able to stream high def? Do you think they're ever going to be able to stream these things? And I know what you guys said, but I kept saying, it's just compression rates. Once they get the compression rates down, once they figure out the codecs to get this stuff out and to get, you know, our faster internets to your house, yeah, they're going to be able to do it. And here we are, and they've done it, and it's completely changed everything. And thank God they did it before COVID, because man, this would have been real. It was hard enough, but yeah. without Netflix, I don't know how I would have made through COVID. And lastly, I'm going to say, I want to thank personally, Professional Bull Riding, the PBR. Because when I got my first plasma in for review, the only channel that was really showing good, good HD, HD
net, right? It was HDNet,
was PBR, man. It was unbelievable, man. You could smell the bull. It was insane. Like, you know, when you got your first HDTV and you're like, it looks 3D. Wait. I can't believe it. And I sat there and watched so much PBR. I knew all the writers' names. I knew who the good and the bad bulls were. I knew everything. I haven't watched it since, but it was so good for those couple of months that I had that TV in for review. So I want to thank PBR personally for really introducing 1080p to me and making me understand just how good it could look. Nice. So thank you.
Yeah. For us, it was Insectia on HDNet. Remember, Braden, that guy with the bugs?
Yeah, HDNet and Discovery HD, I think, were the two.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, he was not built for high def close ups, but they made some high def close ups with that guy that were, you know, exciting.
All right, Tom, this is for you. Let's see, hang on. I don't know if you guys can hear
there
that.
There it is.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Watch out. Content match.
Way quiet.
Content match.
Yeah, exactly.
If that gets copyright stricken on YouTube, man, that's a
good one.
That is an algorithm right there.
This time for sure.
Right.
I do have to ask, in light of the recent price increases at Netflix, is anybody here planning to cancel or downgrade? Everybody holding on? I see a shaking head from DJ.
Not at all.
No. Nah, not yet, but it is getting a little annoying. But, you know, yeah. I guess you got to pay for all that content.
Right.
I know you are, Rob, though, right? I thought that was the line you said, right?
I want to draw a line in the sand because for me, Netflix is worth $15 a month. again, Canadian, maybe I'm being picky because, exchange rate, it's only literally $1 more, than the American price, and the exchange rate would make it higher than that. But I've drawn the line that that's what it's worth. And then when getting 4K and HDR and Atmos was only a dollar more than that, I was like, okay, I can stomach that. And when it was $2 more than that, I was like, all right, I'll begrudgingly do it. It's still closer to 15 than 20. But now it's going to be $19 a month Canadian to get 4K HDR and Atmos. And I'm like, that's just too close to $20. And if they gave me an option of instead of four screens, only one screen or two screens, and I could still keep 4K HDR and Atmos for, you know, $17, I'd be on it, but they only got the three tiers. So, you know, I don't want to downgrade to HD.
I think the
only
price is great because my mom's paying for that one. So I think the price is wonderful. We pay for Hulu and HBO and she does
this Netflix. Explains right. So much about you, Lee. It really does.
Family sticks together, Tom. We're helping each other.
I've said,
he's in his mom's basement.
That's
everybody
right. Yeah.
Heard it here first.
Hush!
There you go.
It's nice. I've said, I think Netflix, it makes it, the way they shoot their original content and put it out in HDR, I think they shoot it purposefully for HDR. Mm-hmm. They have parameters set in place to give you that dynamic picture when you go to watch it at home. So you don't want to go down, you don't want to downgrade because everybody in this room here, everybody in this room here would probably say, if their original content wasn't that dynamic, we wouldn't care because I'll take that in 1080p because all their movies, we probably already own them. So if we want to see them in, if you want to see it in the highest quality, you're going to pull out the disc. But their original content, I can't tell you how many times we've commented on whether it's the Atmos sound that they, like the beginning of what, Six Underground is just insane. It's 20 minutes of just, it's a roller coaster ride of sound. It's a blast. But Dracula, I think, what was it? Dracula? The picture on that was crazy. It was just such a good picture. And but all of their stuff, I swear they give out a parameter so that people, they know how to shoot a scene in HDR for streaming purposes.
Put a lot into their mastering and really gave their artists, you know, the mandate and the equipment and the budget to do it properly. So yeah, that's why I don't want to give it up.
Didn't I read that?
I mean, they know, right? That's what you're looking at. That $1, is that enough to really push me over the edge and say I'm going to get rid of everything that Netflix gives me for that $1 or not?
I know.
Right? So they just keep pushing it because they know even if you cancel, you say that one breaks it, you know, there's going to be a little bit of time and then the next Tiger King or something comes up and you're like, all right, I'm signing up.
That one didn't get me.
Right? Tiger King.
I think it might just have to become the rotation. You know, I have them, you know, 5 or 6 months out of the year, but not the entire year, something like that.
You know, Rob, what they say, the first one is free.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's absolutely the case. Well, to finish off the AV rant side of things, since we had Lee and Tom, it's now my turn. I'm Rob, in case you know somebody's listening for the first time. And I haven't really said who the heck I am, even though I'm talking a lot. So my picks for software, I want to mention Star Trek Lower Decks. Kind of a little bit like Lee saying, hey, Star Wars is finally good again. I'm like, hey, Star Trek is finally good again. A very different slant. It's animated. It's exceedingly fast-paced. The dialogue, they are tripping over their words to say everything that's in the script, but it's humorous. It is all fan service. The crew, you know, the cast that is on that show are essentially, you know, major Star Trek nerds in Star Trek. So, it's just been very enjoyable. And so I'm happy that that's there. CBS All Access, which is actually available in Canada. A lot of streaming services aren't. Hulu isn't, Vudu isn't. But CBS All Access is, however, I watch it on Crave because, we have a service here in Canada called Crave that, gets pretty much everything that's on HBO Max and Hulu and CBS All Access. So. That's how I've been watching that and enjoying it. I did want to mention amongst all this stuff, some humor was much needed this year. So I wanted to call out a very silly Will Ferrell movie, which is a Netflix original. And that is the Eurovision Song Contest, the story of Fire Saga.
I thought that was on there because you actually like Eurovision. I'm like, I like Eurovision fine. I was just surprised you liked it so much.
I will admit I didn't really know Eurovision. I have not ever watched it, certainly not a whole season. I might have seen a performance here or there on YouTube, but that was kind of it. This has brought attention to the Eurovision Song Contest, which is a real thing, but this is, of course, is a fictionalized version, Will Ferrell and Rachel McAdams. And honestly, I mean, it is very silly. It is not to be taken seriously whatsoever. But Yaya Ding Dong is definitely worth it and should win an Oscar. And so, yeah, Eurovision Song Contest on Netflix. And lastly, I want to give a shout out to Evil, which is a network show. It's on CBS. Remember those? Remember broadcast television networks? Evil is a show that I really, really liked last year. And out of all the shows that were new last year, almost everything, even the ones that got renewed before the pandemic, got canceled after they were not able to start production on time. Evil is like the one show left standing, and I'm very glad that it's still around because I very much enjoy that show.
Yeah, my wife and I like that one too. That's a good show.
Oh, good.
Yep. So did you
Tom
watch,
doesn't like it.
Did you watch Picard as far as Star Trek goes?
I did watch Picard. The first episode of Picard was good, and then that's a bunch.
So
I actually enjoyed it. I don't. I'm not a Star Trek guy.
For Star Trek to get good again, huh?
that's my personal opinion. Yeah, DJ's just saying there that that he enjoyed Picard, but it wasn't entirely my cup of tea. So it's time to roll back around where we're doing a rolling order here as we go through each of the segments. So it's finally Ara's time to say what he is enjoying and thankful for in 2020 software wise.
All right. A few things. First, day and date movie releases. The pandemic kind of forced this issue. Braden and I have been talking about this for quite some time on the show, and we see the theater experience is going to change in the future. Even before the pandemic, we thought that it just, when you have the theaters that we have in our houses, I have better audio than most of the theaters in the, you know, out there. Not the high end ones, but a lot of people don't watch in those high end ones. You just go to a multiplex and you might end up in a room that just doesn't have very good audio. So I'm excited about this. A couple movies came out early and were available, only online, but now you have movies in the theaters and online at the same time. So I'm very excited about that going forward. What do you guys think? Excited about it, or am I the only one out here on this?
Oh, no. I used to swear at you guys because I was so against that idea. And like you said, you've been saying it for a long time, and I really enjoy going to the theater, or I should say, I really enjoyed going to the theater. But this pandemic and everything that's happened, I've totally swung around to you guys' side because I'm like, you know what? I feel bad for the theater owners, but as everybody in this podcast has talked about, they need to do something to up their game to get people back in.
3D is not it.
Not just to make, what's that?
3D is not it. Is not it. That's not the solution. Stop talking about it. Stop trying to make us watch it.
I really like it though. I really do.
But you know what's funny is 3D is something the studio would try to do to get you to go back to the theater. We need the theater owners, the theaters to make us want to come back into their building. And I think it's like, and both of you guys' podcasts have said this, it's like they need to create better concessions, not just the pricing and stuff, but just create a better atmosphere, or, you know, kick people out if they're loud, if they're obnoxious. And
adult-only theaters.
I totally have come around to you guys' line of thinking because of like...
Not here.
That's a different kind of movie.
Not here.
Yeah. No, that's a different kind of movie, though. Right.
Yeah. Not the little booths that you rent by the hour.
Hey, you know what you do in your private time is your thing, Lee. I'm not going to judge.
That's a totally different show.
If we are,
Lee, I was going to ask you what that curtain is behind you, but now I'm not.
Would you like me to reveal the thought? Oh my God.
Sorry, Braden, you wanted to say?
No, I was going to say, I mean, I think, you know, with Hamilton coming up and then Disney Plus is going to release the next Pixar movie on Disney Plus, you know, without even sending it to theaters. You know, DJ, to your point, I love watching movies, but I hate going to the theater, right? I mean, and it used to be that I would go to the theater because that was the best place. Sometimes it was the only place, right, when the movies were out, or it was the best place to experience the movie. But everyone else talking and the noise and kids running around and your seat getting kicked, the experience of going to a movie theater is terrible. So if you can get the movies and a better, like, audio video experience at home, I can't imagine why people would want to go back to a theater.
So
did any of us put our money where our mouth is on that, though? Did any of us pay for Mulan?
Yes.
Or are we all just waiting for December?
Sure,
we did in this house.
I voted with my wallet on that one.
I didn't.
Yeah, nice. So did we.
No, Ara's probably old enough to remember, you know, the time before VHS. Because I remember when I was a kid and the Betamax VHS war was going on, and my parents would go rent a VHS or Betamax player and like four movies and bring it home for like the weekend. And that would be like my birthday present, you know, to sit there and be able to watch some movies, which mostly stunk because no one knew what anything was. There was no review system. So, you know, I have gone, and I've said this for the last couple of years, I only go to the movies these days. Well, not anymore, but before COVID, I only went to the movies as a statement or a message to the studios. Like, I want you to make more movies like this one. So I went to the Avengers, some of the first Avengers movies. I went to Wonder Woman. I went to Black Panther. You know, I went to movies that were, important, I thought, to say, hey, you know, this is a movie I should support. I didn't necessarily enjoy myself while I was there, cause at my house, I can press pause when I need to go to the bathroom, and I can tell my kids to get out if they're being too loud or cracking their knuckles or looking at their Facebook or whatever, right? I'm like, go to bed. You know, you can't tell people to go to bed when you're in a movie theater. They throw you out. They get real mad. So, I agree. The home experience is important. I don't know what the future looks like. I don't know that we're going to see movie theaters go away. I would not be surprised. And we talked about this recently on our podcast. If a big player like Amazon or Apple or something like that went around and said, hey, all you know, Regal cinemas that are now empty, how would you like to sell to us so that we can do something innovative there? Right. And we might see something really change within this, something exciting that happened. And I see VR as part of it. I see a lot of different possibilities there. I don't know what it'll look like, but it's not going to be, you know, sticky floors and popcorn and milk duds.
Imagine how I feel. I think everyone on this podcast right now has access to at least a really good theater. You all live in bigger cities than me. And here we have one theater and it sucks. The IMAX screen is pretty good. Like, it's not even a very big IMAX screen and it's pretty good. But the other theaters, they're never any good. Every time I go to a movie in this town, when I did go to movies, it was just like, oh, please be okay. Please be okay. Okay, is the sound okay? Is it okay? All right, it's decent. And great. Hopefully mom will enjoy this movie I brought her to. But I've hated the theater in this town for so long. It just doesn't matter to me. I'll take it day and date if I have to.
Yeah.
So I think what's going to happen is we will still have theaters. They're going to be very specialized. You're not going to have the big megaplexes anymore. What you're going to have is maybe four very high quality theaters that have good concessions, alcoholic drinks, and that kind of stuff. I think that's the future, but the rest of it is going to be at home. All right. So the next thing I'm happy about or thankful about are my listeners that drink with me and listen to music on Friday nights. I've been posting on Friday nights what I'm listening to and what I am drinking. And this is not just background music that you would just have on, say, an Echo or something like that. This is on high quality speakers designed for stereo. Not our home theater speakers necessarily. And I sit and just enjoy the music. I try and take it in and slow down. And, some of our listeners have, joined me in this and they'll tweet up what they're listening to as well. So I appreciate them for that. And the last thing is I'm thankful for iTunes, Amazon Prime Video, Hulu, Netflix, etc., all these things, because there's so much incredible content out there in HDR, Dolby Vision, 4K. It makes our obsession with home theater fun. It gives us content. We don't have to go out and get a disc. It just comes to us. So I'm thankful for those services.
Yeah, thankful that those survived, even though we lost Quixtar, but at least the streaming services survived, right?
Not just Quixtar, Quibi. Britain, we lost Quibi this year. R.I.P. Quibi.
We lost a streaming service, too. Well, yeah.
You know, on the tombstone, Quibi 2020-2020.
Well, 2020 lost Quibi's
career.
Quibi was kind of stillborn.
It's the smallest little headstone ever. It's very short.
Yeah. Well,
outside of Quibi, though, Braden, what were you thankful for in 2020, even all the time you might have spent on that service?
So, first of all, let me just point out that when you guys were talking about the movies that you're thankful for, I do appreciate you rubbing in the fact that you all still have home theaters, because I don't, right? So I'm, you know, watching on, you know, just whatever random TV happens to be there. But kind of along the same lines as the Roku and being thankful for the fact that I could take a Roku with me to any house, the over-the-top streaming TV services that we can get access to now, the Sling TVs, and I use YouTube TV right now, have fundamentally changed how we're able to consume content. And, you know, we would go months back in the day when I had cable or satellite with nobody watching cable or satellite, right? Because the kids weren't into it, and, you know, maybe they'd watch Disney Channel a little bit, but you can't turn it off and turn it back on. You know, you can't decide, hey, I want to put a TV in a different room and just throw the TV in there and have it work. And we had a stretch when even when we could move back into the house, the master bedroom wasn't usable. So I had to kick the kids out of one of their rooms, and we were in their room. So I had to grab one of the TCL TVs and drag it in. They don't have a cable or TV in their room, but having streaming TV on that TCL meant I didn't have to get a cable box. I didn't have to figure out where the cable line was run to. The over-the-top streaming services. And then we had everything shut off because we weren't watching any live content. And then UEFA came back and they were playing soccer. So it took all of like 30 seconds to turn TV back on so we could watch that when it was on. It's just, you know, the difference between when we had cable back in the day and having a 2-year contract and you couldn't do anything, and then having to pay another $20 a month to get another room turned on, versus now of just saying, hey, I'm going to go put my credit card in and I've got live TV. It's been awesome, and it's been phenomenal for, you know, our ability to sort of consume whatever we wanted to consume. And we've been talking on our show for a long time of wanting to get to a la carte cable right. programming, basically just kind of go down the menu and say, I want these items and I don't want to have to pay for all this other junk that you're making me pay for. And we're getting really, really, really close to that, which I think is cool.
Yeah. That's a wonderful smattering of hardware and software that that we have been thankful for this year, and that leads us into the AV rant portion of the show, if we want to think of it that way. For anyone who might be listening to us from Brightside or listening to us from the HGTV and Home Theater podcast and isn't familiar with AV rant, the format of the show is some news and some updates at the top of the show, but then pretty much an hour and a half, sometimes more, solid of just question and answer. And so we couldn't do a three podcast show where we're going format by format without answering some listener questions. So we solicited some, requested things that, people would want to hear all six of us weigh in on, because this is their opportunity for that. This isn't going to be a normal every week or every month occurrence. So we, wanted to select something that all six of us could weigh in on here. And we're going to start with a question that came from the AV Rant audience. This is our listener, Andrew L. And he asks, if someone is starting out with a very limited budget, where are the best places in a home theater to compromise or sacrifice, and where is it worth waiting and saving up? Why don't we start off, Brayden, down in the bottom right square, if we're looking at the video. What are your thoughts on where do you compromise, where do you wait?
So my advice would be get something. Right. So don't wait on anything. If you don't have surround sound, scrape a few pennies together, dig through the cushions in the couch, get something. Right. Because I would never say, you know, wait until you can get the perfect surround sound before you buy surround sound. Mm-hmm. If you don't have surround sound, you need surround sound. If you don't have a subwoofer, get a subwoofer. If you can't afford an SVS, just get something. You need a sub. You need a center channel. So I would say as soon as you have at least one of everything, then you start focusing on where do I want to upgrade and what do I really want to put budget into. And I would say that I would recommend you put like your most budget is into speakers, because those are the things that last the longest. That's where your investment lasts the longest. And they change the least over time. So, you know, instead of dropping a massive amount of money into a really, really expensive TV and then having really bad surround sound, you know, that TV is going to be out of date in a couple years. You know, you're better off putting a bunch of money into really good surround sound and then waiting up and getting the TV later. That would be my take.
Yeah, it's an interesting take. Lee, I saw you giving some thumbs up, so you are in agreement
absolutely.
With at least some
don't,
of that.
Don't blow it out on the receiver. Like, that's almost the least important thing. Depending on your home theater setup, if you're starting out, get the 5.1 to start. Get a basic, just a very basic 5.1 receiver, but do buy good speakers, like Brayden just said. But yeah, don't buy fancy cables. buy the monoprice cables.
There you go.
Do not blow it out.
Compromise on cables.
We will all agree on that. Yes, definitely do not spend the money on
cables. But it's true that if you buy very good speakers, they do last a long time. My main speakers are now 20 years old. They sound great. Objectively great.
Well, that's an interesting thing there. Is there a compromise then, perhaps? Because I think we are all in agreement that speakers hold their value, and if you spend good money there, that you are going to get a lot in return and keep them for a long time. But, you know, Tom and I will sometimes give the advice that if you have a very limited budget, you know, that getting five speakers immediately would really mean something that you are certainly going to replace the instant that you can. Would it possibly be better to start with one pair of really good speakers, start with that with the knowledge that you might not even necessarily keep them as your front, left, right, but as you upgrade and replace them, they can become your surrounds, and that you sort of do things piecemeal over time, particularly with speakers, since we all agree getting good ones are worth it. Ara, maybe you can weigh in on that.
I would even go a little bit different than that. I would say buy a soundbar as a placeholder. Don't even buy cheap speakers that you're going to throw away. Soundbar will get you your left, center, right. And then, as Braden and Lee said, spend your money on speakers. I think we all unanimously agree that speakers are where you really spend your money. speakers are where you spend your money. Then the next thing, I would spend a little bit more on the TV. I do agree with Braden that the TV will change, but you want something to enjoy. At least that is something that'll be pleasant for your eye. And with the soundbar, you'll hear the audio, but it'll, you know, it's a good place to start. The receiver, you can get that later as well.
I mean, I think thankfully, on the display side of things, I mean, these days, what you can get in, like, even a 75-inch size, honestly, is nowhere near the sort of price point it was even just 5 years ago, that you can get a genuinely large screen TV that is by no means a slouch. I mean, Braden's favorite brand, TCL. I mean, the one thing that I would sometimes say is maybe not go for the literally cheapest TCL that exists, the 3 series or the 4 series. I'm like, if you can get to the 5 series, all of a sudden you're at that sort of butter zone of you've got at least a full array backlight. It's not necessarily local dimming. It's got like 16 zones, so it's not really local dimming so much. But, you know, you can get to that point where you don't longer just have a strip of light along the bottom illuminating the whole screen, but you can get like a 65, 75-inch screen for under $1,000. You know, to me, that's, I guess I can call that a compromise because, hey, if I had my druthers, I'd go grab an OLED or I'd have the space for a projector. But, you know, what you're getting, the value that you're getting in something like that, I think is pretty tremendous. So that to me is a very reasonable quote unquote compromise to make on the screen side. Tom,
hey, be careful if you're calling TCL a compromise, man. That might be fighting words.
I'm saying the five series as a comparison.
I'm just messing with you, man. No.
I know.
Well, as anybody who's ever listened to the AV Rant podcast knows, I will always tell you that the surround back speakers are the most important speakers in your system. You should definitely start with them.
Start there and move your way forward. I like it.
That's right. You got to start the back and buy your way forward.
You're right.
Okay. That's no other way to do it. Honestly, it's too often people come to us and because our podcast is a Q&A only podcast, that's all we do is question and answer from our listeners. A lot of times people come to us almost feeling embarrassed to say, oh, this is the stuff I have. And, you know, I don't want to know if I should get something. You know, what can I do? Listen, we all started with a Frankenstein system. We all started with some pair of speakers that our uncle gave us and then a receiver that was handed down from somebody that we got at a yard sale or something like that. You know, it's okay. Start with what you have and don't worry about, you know, whether or not it's the best. And I think my biggest piece of advice here is not to worry too much about compromise. It's more to not fall down the rabbit hole. And as anybody who's ever shot for an amplifier will tell you, that hole is deep, dark, and never ending. As you look and you think to yourself, I just need a small two-channel amp for my overhead speakers. And you're like, well, if I'm going to get two channels, I might as well let them power the front speakers. But if I'm going to have the front speakers, I need a bigger amp. But if I'm going to do the front two speakers, I might as well do the front three speakers. And if I'm going to do the front three speakers, I might as well do the front five, the five floor level speakers, huh? But for not that much more. And pretty soon you're up to $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 for your right. amplifier. You don't have to do that. You can contact any one of our podcasts and reach out and get some advice about what we think, and we'll try to put you, you know, check where you're going and give you some advice that will help you get to a place that's reasonable and will get you some good sound and good video to begin with. Like Rob just said, when we were talking about the TCL, displays, you know, TCL Vizio, they make good budget displays that are reasonably priced and good performing and are phenomenal. I mean, compared to like what we're talking about earlier, you know, my parents got a 55 inch, 56 inch, Samsung Plasma and, you know, and it was on sale for like $2,600. The prices we have now, $400, $500, $600, you get an insanely good TV compared to, what we were looking at that price point, just like Rob said 5 years ago. So you can get there. You don't have to spend a lot of money. Yes, you might start with your front two speakers, because that's all you can afford right now. No, it's fine. You don't have to have surround sound right away. You don't have to, and this is coming from me, try not to everybody get too shocked. You don't have to have a subwoofer right away. You know, I know.
What? Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Everybody.
Wait.
Hold on to Lee.
Am I also right?
No.
Could you it are be still that so I'm
very,
also
very
right?
wrong. You just.
He
just,
said at the beginning.
And it was the beginning for me. For a long time.
It's the semantics. Tom is saying you don't have to get a subwoofer two, right away. Right? Yeah, two.
That's right.
So, yeah. That was the,
right.
Yeah, misinterpretation.
So, you know. Just, you know, do, I will tell you what I did. When I had my little Frankenstein system that was just good enough. I had a tiny subwoofer that was terrible. I had a one, you know, surround speaker that had a, you know, a ripped surround that I kept taping up. You know, I had a Bose outdoor speaker as my center channel and two Panasonic speakers, my front left and right, that came from I don't know where. So, you know, we all come from someplace. And while I had this terrible system, which was still better than what a lot of people had in their houses, I sat there with my little spreadsheet and I read all the little articles and I did all the cost benefit analysis and I changed my mind 700 times until my wife finally said, okay, I think we can probably afford a surround. And before she finished saying those words, it was ordered. I mean, I was ready to go. The cart was already full. I just had to press play. It was ready to go. So you'll be
well,
there.
Would we say all of us would be in agreement that if we're looking at what in our circles might be called a compromise, that stopping at five speakers, you know, focusing on other things at that right. point, yeah. you know, you put together the Frankenstein system, you get to 5.1, you get to a decent flat panel, 65 or 75 inches. But before you go expanding the number of speakers beyond five, that perhaps that's the point where you start upgrading things that already exist, and then you can repurpose at that sure. point. Are we yes. all in agreement with that one, or anybody yeah. think different?
Yeah, yeah. And to be honest with you, for most rooms, 5.1 is all you're going to need.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm. Right. Or all you can have.
I mean, if you've got a dedicated theater, then go 7.1 with Atmos. But you know, if you got just a family room, 5.1 is way more than you need.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that we haven't talked a lot about is the decor in the room. And that's something where I think DJ possibly excels beyond the rest of us, because that's been an equally important part in his home theater is the decor of the room. And for, I don't know, I'm in my theater, it's, well, you know, it's 11 by 12 feet and there's 11 speakers and two subs already in there. I don't have room for decor, but that's something I'd love to hear DJ weigh in on.
Well, that's where I would say skimp. You don't need that right away.
Just don't compromise on snacks, right? Compromise on decor,
right.
but
well,
not on
I
snacks.
Have that right at the front. I got the candy little thing right at the front. But that's a great, great point in that to me, when I built my theater, the decor was something that I always had in mind because I was trying to recreate. It sounds stupid because if you look at my theater, you'd never see that in a real movie theater. But I was trying to recreate that environment and a fun environment. And I've been in a bunch of home theaters where they're just gear guys and you go in and there's wires on the floor and the speakers are just like, they're just literally just drilled right into the ceiling. And once the lights go out, it rivals any home theater, but they don't care about the aesthetics. I have an art background. I care about this stuff. A lot of it is collectibles that I care about. But to get to kind of tie that decor idea into when people ask me this question, especially where it's like somebody asks you this question in particular, where can I skimp when I'm starting or where can I save? It's people that are brand new at this and they don't have a clue like what they're in for, right? They know, maybe they know the words, like they don't even know how to pronounce Atmos, right? You know, Atmos, you know, whatever. And I always say, you know, you get a cheap receiver, and if you want to spend some money, do it on some neutral sounding speakers. I was led in the direction of NHT back in the '90s. And like Lee said, I just upgraded my front channel speakers from the '90s.
Wow.
So those things were over 25 years old, and I went with just the newer version of NHTs. Because that's your foundation if you're building a system, right? So that's going to blow you away. And you set up a 5-1 system or a 5 system to like what Ara said. You don't really need the subwoofer right
away. How about that?
What Tom said too. But you don't need it right away because you're
never coming on the podcast again. You're just never, it's never happening. All right. This is it. I hope you're enjoying your moment in the sun because this is the end of
it. I'm going on HD, guys, and unhooking my subwoofer.
Yeah. But you don't need the 5 channels going at once. Your head's going to be spinning, especially if you're new to this and you've had maybe just a sound bar or something. And now all of a sudden there's sounds coming from behind you. God forbid, Tom. And you're amazed by this. And it's just that's so much fun. And that's what snowballs that rabbit hole, like Tom said, is because now you want to upgrade that. Well, how do I upgrade this part? And then you might be looking at your picture. And Tom, you don't even have 4K picture yet, right?
I do.
You're
not.
Still a 1080p.
Yeah.
That you still have a big image that's impressive and that gives you that environment. And, you know, someday I'm sure you want to get to 4K like everybody does and you'll get there. But that's part of that rabbit hole, that snowball. But just starting out, that's all you need is just that 5 channels.
Yeah, we believe
you,
DJ,
having you pat me on the back like, oh, you'll get there, Tom. Don't worry, Tom. You'll get there.
We believe in you, man. Come on.
I love your reason for not doing it, though. It's wiring.
It is wiring.
I know.
I totally get that. In fact, that's why I didn't upgrade my projector, because of wiring.
Well, I've got an HDMI cable on my wall that I'm sure is not going to carry 4K HDR.
Right.
I'll defend Tom. I'm lucky I got to see a movie in Tom's home theater. It looks great. It's not lacking. You know,
it looks really
nice.
Oh, no. 1080p is still outstanding.
Yeah, yeah.
But DJ, you made a great point there, is that you were trying to reproduce something or recreate an experience in your theater, and you had a plan for kind of what you wanted to build. And I don't know that a lot of people would actually do that. Like, where should I compromise? What should I go out and get? Do you have the full plan of what you want your eventual home theater to be? Right. And then you can look at, as I map from where I am now to how do I get there? What are the right pieces for me to upgrade? And then it's kind of like what we talk about in our show. When you start with automation in your home, just put something in, right? And then that'll give you the ideas of what else you want to go automate, and you kind of grow over time. If you have your home theater and you're watching and you're like, okay, well, you know, I know that it can be better. Like, my rear surrounds can be better. I'm just not getting everything I should be getting out of those rear surrounds. Then, you know, that's what you want to go upgrade, right? But, you know, having that plan of kind of where do I want to go from here to there allows you to figure out, you know, where should I compromise and what should I invest in?
To speak to DJ's point here, if you go from having just a TV to having a full surround at Dolby Atmos, double subwoofer, fully treated home theater, it's almost impossible to appreciate that.
Yeah.
You don't, you know,
you
that's,
miss the fun.
Well, there's the fun, but there's also, you know, when you go from stereo to surround, it's massive. It's this huge difference. Right. And then you add the subwoofer and you're like, and your mind's completely blown. And for those of you that aren't in home theater, and then maybe this is the first time you've ever heard anybody talk about this stuff before, think about the time that you went from watching regular TV or VHS, and then you got your first DVD player, or you went from your CRT to an HD DVD or HD TV. That kind of mind blowing, like, oh my God, I never could believe that anything could look this much better. That's what having surround versus stereo and having your first subwoofer experience is like. And being able to do that slowly allows you to know, okay, this is how much better this can be. Now, how can I go back and start changing and making things even better than they
are? It's so difficult to do it slowly today, though. Like, you show up and you can, like we've been talking about, you can buy a really pretty good TV and a surround sound system and a receiver and be ready to go. I guess I'm happy I'm the age I am in a way, because I got to kind of see it all happen over time. You know, my first TV was a 27 inch and I hooked it up to my rack stereo system that I bought at a department store and just built from there. So, but yeah, now you can, unless it's a really, really limited budget, you can just about get something that, I can't think of like, what's going to match that experience of going from NTSC television to high def TV? What's going to match that experience of going old crappy stereo to good surround sound? What's going to be like that ever again? I don't know.
Go out there and listen to some electrostatic speakers, like full electrostatic speakers will do that to you.
Yeah, but a good answer to the question, though, too, Tom, is to say just enjoy the journey.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
Right. Don't worry about, you know, what you need to compromise on or what you need to invest in. It's all a journey. We're all trying to make, you know, better experiences at home. And like you said, the first time you turn around startled because something happened in your rear surround speakers and you weren't expecting sound to come from over there, and then you realize, oh, wait, that's my surround sound. You know, that experience of having that, you know, your theater change from a room where you watch TV into a theater is fun. Right. And there's no reason to skip any of those steps.
Pausing the movie because you're not sure if it's raining inside or outside.
Outside.
That's always
or
nice.
Or the knock on the door or the telephone that came from the rear channel. Like, is that mine? Yeah. Or is that in the movie?
Yeah, that's Terminator 2. Yeah. They do that. But and it allows you to tinker too. Because if you start with all the channels, like Lee was saying, it's like you don't even know what you're probably had somebody install it, but if you just start slowly and you want to hear how many people boosted their rear channels when they first got 5.1 because they were like, I want to hear those louder. And it's like, they were so cranked up that it sounded like a church in there because everything was echoing off the back wall. But that was the fun of it. And then you realize it's like, let's tone that down a little bit. And then I've had some experts come out to calibrate stuff and they're like, oh, they appreciate it when they come in and like your rear channels aren't blowing out the room and your TV isn't in vivid mode. It's right. Like, but you learn that stuff and it's, you know, it's just, that's the fun. Like you said, that's the journey, Braden, but it's also a never ending journey. I mean, every single one of us is still moving on to something else newer and better.
If it was ending, Braden and I would have stopped our podcast many years
ago.
Exactly. We retired.
There has been enough to keep the podcast going. AV Rant as well has been around. We always shocked that we have enough questions going on 13. to keep us going for 2 hours every week. So it's a pleasant surprise, but a surprise nonetheless that we have not answered every question that is out there. And to that end, the HD guys have selected a question, of course, as well for us to answer during this section. What is the question you have chosen? Whomever of the two of you would like to read it out.
So this one's on me, or I don't even know if you know that I grabbed this question. So there was a list of questions to choose from and I saw this one and thought, okay, this is cool. I'm going to throw it in. So Ara, this is like news to you as well. But the question came in from Jay and Gary and says, is there anything in our current home theaters that we regret including? Or if we had the chance to do things over, what would we change? And this is almost like a part two to the question that we just answered and that we just talked about. And it's actually one of the questions that anytime I hire an engineer, one of the questions I ask in an interview is, tell me about a project that you worked on that didn't quite work out like you would have hoped. Or if you had it to do over again, you'd do it differently. And I think as we look back on our home theaters and that journey that we've all been on, I guarantee there have been a bunch of things that I've done thinking, okay, this is going to be awesome. And then realize, yeah, that was a giant mistake. Right. And then go out and do something else. Right. You know, I bought the big giant, DVD carousel at one point and tried to, you know, catalog all the discs in the DVD carousel and tried to have that whole system up and running. And I thought it was going to be awesome. And then realized a few months into it, it was a mess and a nightmare. And I never wanted to have anything to do with it ever again. I've made mistakes, but I think that's part of the fun. Right. And certainly, you know, I tried to include some automation in my theater to turn lights on and off before that technology wasn't really ready for it. And that, you know, pissed my wife off more than anything else. So yeah, I've made mistakes, but it's been fun. All of it's been fun.
I agree. There's really nothing that I regret. It, like you said, it's a learning curve.
I regret the DVD carousel. No, okay. Not going to argue that one at all. Yeah. That is a huge regret. That was money
wasted.
There was
a year Braden and I went to CES and we saw the Kaleidoscape, and we wanted it desperately to have a Kaleidoscape. And so along the way, and it was so expensive, it was so far out of reach, there was no way we could afford it. So we tried to create our own Kaleidoscape. And I remember I started with this thing called DVDpedia, and it was a really cool interface, and you would catalog your DVDs, and then it would launch your DVD player, and it was clunky. That didn't work. And then there was Boxy, and Boxy worked pretty good, but not quite. And then I got to Plex, and Plex ended up giving me everything I ever wanted to compare with Kaleidoscape. But even then, I started moving away from Plex. Not that there's anything wrong with Plex, because it's still the best, but I started buying my movies on iTunes, and the Apple TV integration was so nice. I just pull it up in the movies app on iTunes, and I was done with it. And we get a lot of grief that, you guys are watching iTunes, the quality's not that good. And we always acknowledge on the show that the best is getting a UHD disc and watching it in, full glory. But sometimes you have to compromise and go with something that's really good, not necessarily the best, but so convenient. And that's kind of where we are. So it was the journey, like Braden said. No regrets, just it was having fun along the way.
Well, your answer was a really good reminder, Ara, because I had an answer for what I've regretted in my theater, and I'm still going to give it because it's a big one. I regret, now that you've mentioned it, all the Blu-rays and Ultra HD Blu-rays that I've purchased. I've never redeemed the codes for iTunes or the digital codes. I never bothered redeeming it because I'm like, I've got the disc. When am I ever going to watch the streaming version? But now everything on iTunes has been upgraded to 4K HDR and Atmos pretty much. I'm like, kind of would have been convenient if I had redeemed those expiring codes.
That'd be, so, I let my kids redeem the codes, and I have no idea what account they redeemed them on. I have no clue where those discs, where those movies are stored. They're like, I don't know, we just plugged them in. I'm like, jeez.
But Rob's big regret is that over the years, I've spent a lot of money on home theater gear that has come and gone, and there's actually a whole heck of a lot of it that's just stored. I've never bothered to sell it off. Some things I just can't let go of, like that LG LH90 LCD TV that has no place in my home anymore, but no one else will appreciate it like I did, so I've gotta hold on to it. But, the big regret is that, I think it was maybe 2013. Was about the time where if I had really planned things right, I could have sold my apartment and put myself not in a great financial position, but might have been able to buy an actual detached house, farther away than I want to live, but it might have been possible. But I was thinking, okay, the value of my apartment's going up this amount and blah, blah, blah. Didn't realize that the value of detached houses in the lower mainland area of British Columbia, Canada would go exponentially higher than anything that I could ever own. So I am now in a position where purchasing a detached house, individually is not really in the cards. And if you want a home theater upgrade, having a detached house is the biggest home theater upgrade you could possibly have. And nice. I very much regret that I did not play the financial game properly and did not climb the property ladder at the, sort of what might be the only opportunity I would have had in my area.
You can always move to Manitoba.
That is definitely
I
do more
have
affordable.
One, I just now thought of one regret I have over time in home theater. It's I wish I hadn't
to me,
tried.
I know. Go on.
Not having a subwoofer.
Not having a
How much time did you spend?
That was a lot of years, and I should have jumped on that. But waiting, I did get two very good ones. Multiple times over the years, I tried to have like a Windows computer be a home theater sort of computer. I've hooked a lot of computers to television starting in the 90s. And every, if I'm looking back, every time it was a giant waste of time. It never worked well. It never looked good. It was clunky and you had a keyboard on the couch and it was just stupid. I don't know. I don't know why I kept trying it, but, Maybe one day there'll be a way to do it, but now you just get a little stick of a computer and put it in an HDMI.
Well, I thought Microsoft had a good product with their DVD. What was that called? Yeah. Their Media Server.
Yeah, the Media Center Edition.
Yeah, Windows Media Center.
Yes. Yeah.
And it worked really well with the Xbox. Oh, that was, to me, one of the best implementations. And then 1 year we were at Cedia, and there was like 10 companies that came out with standalone boxes that were essentially just a PC with the Media Center in it. And that lasted for about 30 minutes and then it was gone. And I don't know why it didn't work, but, and then they got rid of it in their software, which was kind of a bummer because it was a really a nice.
I still do hook a computer to the television, but it's my laptop and I just jack it into the front of the AV receiver if I want to watch something that isn't available via streaming, if you know what I mean.
You know, he keeps saying words that sound like they're, like he's technologically savvy, but then every thing that he says sounds like a Luddite. Like, I love using a USB port on my car. I plug a USB stick on it, and I'm like, what? Who does that?
You asked what I was thankful for?
Why don't you just put your phone in, like a normal
person?
I have
this USB stick, from 1994. Like,
that? It's really easy. Well, we started collecting MP3s.
Well, he's thankful for the USB stick because he's not using a floppy.
That's right. Do you remember back in the day when you download MP3s off like FTP sites and off Napster? We started collecting MP3s in the 90s, and it continues to this day. So we have a gigantic collection of music, and just throwing some stuff on a stick and putting it in the car is kind of cool. Still kind of cool.
I don't think you know what cool means, but go on.
I'm a strange mix of old stuff and new stuff. I'm like the world's oldest millennial. I don't know what age I am.
That's hilarious.
Oh my God, Lee, you're killing me.
Tom, what's your regret or thing you would do over in your theater?
So, I mean, obviously surround backs were a huge mistake. I mean, there's no doubt about that. In every theater that I've had them in, they've always made things worse, including the one I'm currently in. And that's a jab at myself because I do talk about surround backs and often suggest that people don't need them and Rob doesn't. So if you like surround backs, ask Rob a question, not me. But, honestly, you guys have kind of taken a lot of the stuff I was thinking about because there's been what Ara was talking about during that, there was that era of the Windows Media Center and there was a bunch of HTPCs, home theater PCs that were being released and they were uber expensive and all they really were people who could put together a box and get the Windows Media Center on it and put the interface over the top of it and make sure everything worked together. Well, because the guys at Audioholics didn't want to review those because they were hard to review and it sucked, they said, hey, new guy, review this thing. And I was like, yay, I get to review stuff. I reviewed like four of those things, maybe five. And they're hard to review because I'm the guy who you send the gear to and it's like, how come it does this? They're like, we've been testing this for 7 years and it's never done that for anybody. I'm like, yeah, I'm that guy. So, it was always an excruciating process to get everything working and everything single home theater PC review should have had a PS and 3 months later it stopped working because they were all that way. And that's why Rob, who does the Plex servers and, you know, does all that stuff in his theater and he's been trying to get me to do it and, you know, been encouraging me to for years. And I'm like, nah, I'm just not doing it. And it's because of that. But, you know, like Ara was saying, it's about the journey. I will say that my biggest regret, I think if you want to talk about like, you know, expenditure of money, was in my previous home theater, I got like, I went to a shop to go look for home theater seating, put together some stuff, got some ideas, found a style I liked, but they didn't have it in stock. So I just ordered it with my wife. My wife and I sat there, we picked it out, we picked out the shape we wanted, we picked out the leather that we wanted and everything else, and we got it. And it came in, and I swear this couch was built for basketball players. Like, my feet didn't touch the ground, you know? And the headrest was like right at the crown of my head, right? So if I scooched down, I could be under the headrest, or I had to like sit super erect so that I could get my head on the headrest. It was the least comfortable couch I have ever owned, and it was just thousands of dollars that we spent on this thing, and I've never regretted anything more than that. So, advice, if you're going to buy some home theater seating, sit on it first. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. Yep. Well, DJ, have we left you any bones to pick over? Something that you regret or would have done different in your theater?
I can't believe nobody. I'm going last. Yeah.
Yeah.
And nobody hit on this. Nobody's bought monster cables. Nobody's bought.
I have not.
By wire speaker wire that for like a you put it into your amp. And then it splits at the end because that makes the sound better when you have a speaker that can be bi-wired. It's still one amp. It just splits at the end for that cleaner sound. Yeah. I did that. I spent all the money on monster cables. You had to have the best RCA cables. And now they're sitting in a box. But I think I can't believe nobody hit on that. You guys hit on that like every week.
Like, yeah, we left the right answer for last. You got the right answer.
Or you left it like the easiest answer for me. But I think my biggest regret, which is much like everybody said, I'm the bright side. I don't regret anything. It's like, cause we learn from these mistakes. And my biggest learning experience came from me buying that Bose 5 channel system that it was the cube speakers that came with the nice ceiling mounts in them in my apartment. And I raved about these things. I didn't have and this is a family podcast, but I didn't have a bleeping clue what I was doing, what I was listening to or anything. And the guy, I wish I could find him today. He owned a Laserdisc store and he taught me pretty much everything I know or knew. And back in the 90s, and he's like, what do you got? And he's the one that turned me on to NHT. And he started telling me all about like impedance, frequency response, everything like that. And he goes, look at a Bose product. What is any of that? And I was like, I don't know. Look it up. There isn't. It's all, you know, proprietary design. That's all they care about. And don't get me wrong. They have good stuff for that, but it's not for us because you can't tune it. You can't. And that was, I learned so much from that. And then when I went to my NHT speakers, which by the way, were like literally almost 10 times cheaper.
I wouldn't mind Bose if they were cheap, but that's the problem with Bose. It's not their performance. It's that you're paying for
it's crazy money. Yeah.
It's funny. So since you guys were talking about all the regrets, I was living through so many more because you're like monster cable. I'm like, yeah, dude, I bought so many cables I shouldn't have bought. And then you're talking about like the discs that you bought. And I kind of bet that HD DVD would win. I had an HD DVD player. I had a whole stack of HD DVD discs. And you know, there's a regret right there.
Brayden, I just got rid of my HD DVD player this year. I finally gave it up. I had the HD DVD player in the closet with a whole bunch of discs sitting on top of it. And I finally went, I'm just never going to watch this. I had to give it up. So
you guys, I invested in an extra external Xbox 360 HD DVD disc drive in case I need to back up something again. You know, gotta have one on hand.
I forgot about that thing.
So
HD
before
DVD
guys,
was
we
better.
Move on. Before we move on, what do you guys think a 6-foot monster cable that is 4K capable? Go
it's
for
not it. Certified. I'll tell you that much.
$185.
Well, that seems cheap. $365, just because of my kid's been asking me about.
I'm going to go with a dollar, Bob.
It seems like AudioQuest territory, so I'll say $200. That's what AudioQuest also charges.
All right, so the answer is $30.
What?
And I think they just realized nobody's buying this stuff anymore. So, and then when I checked their website, cables are under legacy products. They're selling more stuff like headphones and that kind of stuff. So Monster pivoted. Ah, right. They realized nobody's spending the money.
Good
but
for them.
The funny thing is, I think Rob, you said AudioQuest. Some people are still trying to sell these speakers, these cables at very high prices.
Yeah. Yep.
And I don't understand how anybody buys it.
We're going to hit on that in a few minutes.
Well, we are starting to run long here, but we're not going to leave out the question that DJ has selected because, hey, he put this whole thing together. So, DJ, what would you like to ask the panel on behalf of one of your listeners?
All right, Graham C. Thanks to all my listeners that submitted questions. But this one here, we already hit on this a little bit, but Graham C. comes in with, what's your best theater story that makes you never want to go back besides COVID? i.e. crappy theater experiences that make you happy to have a, quote, home theater, end quote.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
So
who's kicking it off?
That's an easy one for me. I was at a... This was when I was first getting really into home theater. I had my 5.0 system, and I had gone to a family reunion with... And I'm the second oldest of, like, 30 cousins. So I packed a bunch of my cousins into a van, and we drove... You know, instead of going to the local theater, whatever little town we were in, I drove an extra like hour to go to a, you know, something that had like Dolby or DTS. This was years and years ago. So Dolby or DTS or one of those theaters. And we got there. We watched Air Force One with Harrison Ford, and we sat there and I watched this whole movie going, what is wrong with the sound in here? It sounds mono. I mean, we drove all this way and I'm not lying. The very last scene. The last 2 minutes of the movie, suddenly somebody went up into the booth and went, oh, this doesn't sound right. And they flipped a switch and suddenly all the speakers came on and the bass started rumbling. And I was like, so angry. I've never been so, I walked out and I started like yelling. I'm like, what happened with the sound? What are you doing? They're like, well, you know, if you didn't have a good experience, we can give you a ticket to come back. I'm like, I live in California. I'm like in Kentucky. When am I coming back? This is, you know, I was so mad. Mm. But yes, that was my big experience that really made me so happy once we, I finally got a proper home theater.
Maybe I'll go next. Mine is seeing Pacific Rim in IMAX, and thankfully in the Vancouver area I have two genuine IMAX theaters. One of them was one of the earlier ones in North America. So they have the full film version of IMAX. If you want to see it, you get the genuine tall image that even some of the digital IMAX theaters don't provide these days. But I was in there watching Pacific Rim. Now, I typically try to sit in the not the very back row because I want to have some room behind me, but IMAX being so huge and so loud, I'll usually go like, you know, two rows are behind me. I'm in the third from the back. Well, there was a woman and her boyfriend or husband or whatever sitting in the back row behind me. And every time the dog came on screen in Pacific Rim, she squealed loud enough that in IMAX in Pacific Rim, everybody could hear her squealing because there was a dog on screen. And yeah, that's just...
Broke, you know, the immersion
home
for
theater,
you, Rob.
You're not dealing with that. Not dealing with the person who, I mean, it's a dog. I like dogs. I like dogs a lot. You don't have to squeal every time one is
visible.
I don't
know. They're awful cute. I mean.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll go next.
Lee, what's yours?
Let me go next.
Yeah.
Right. I started hating theaters like back in the 90s. I remember watching Saving Private Ryan. I can't remember which year that was. And right before a pivotal scene toward the end, the film literally melted and disappeared from the screen. I kid you not. Right toward the end, we had to wait a week to finish the movie before we could get back to the theater. Melted, went away. And then also...
Luckily, that's fairly short.
Yes. And then also, when was it, 97, 98, Titanic. Went to see Titanic. And
well, that was your problem right
yes,
there.
Yes, well, you know, you go where people want to go. And it's okay movie, I suppose. But the whole movie, it was tilted a few degrees to one side.
So it was sinking.
No, it was listing to one side the whole time. Even before it hit the iceberg, it was listing to one.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
And then just as Rose is letting go of Jack's hand and he goes into the water, somebody had the deadliest silent gas. And the rest of the movie was ruined. And we're giggling while the guy's dying and going in the water. And we're all just like retching. So yeah, I've hated theaters for a long, long time. I've always been happy to watch stuff at home.
Could have led with that one.
Oh, man. All right. DJ, what's your story?
Really,
on this one?
Really quick. Endgame. Seeing Endgame. Maybe this is what puts me on to Ira Braden's, like, all right, I'm done with theaters. But in our local theater, you can put the seats up, you know, put your feet up, relax. Mm-hmm. And I don't. I like to sit upright so I get the surround speakers in my ears and everything. So I'm sitting upright. The guy next to me puts his seat up, put his feet up, kicks his shoes off barefoot right next to me. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I was like, it says no, you can't just wear them in. You don't get such, like, you need, and they were, it was disgusting. It was absolutely ruined the movie. Had to see it 3 more times in the theater to make up for it.
Oh, hey, now you can go in there and someone can be like, hey, yeah, I've got a mask here. It's in my hand.
Right.
I just want to see them. Ugh. See bare feet while you're trying to watch a movie and they're sticking up in front of your...
Well, Braden, what's your tale?
Oh, I've got so many. So I've got one like that, DJ, where you know how people will like to put their feet up sort of on either side of your seat if they're sitting in the row behind you? I had one of those bare feet. Right? And then how do you like get the foot out of there, right? Like do you kind of elbow it? You don't want to touch it, right? Like how do you
get rid of
that
foot? You take a piece of ice out of your drink and just kind of draw on their foot with it. That'll end it right there.
So I had that one. Had one where inevitably, no matter when I go to the movie, even if we do the reserve seats, I end up sitting in front of the birthday party with like, you know, a dozen 12-year-old boys that aren't watching the movie. They're just cracking jokes and farting and pulling each other's finger and stuff. I think the worst theater experience I've ever had, though, was having to go sit through Avatar in 3D. And the movie itself, I didn't enjoy. Being in 3D and not being able to turn off the 3D and just being stuck there watching Avatar in 3D is like, man, you know, I could have got up and left. If my kids wanted to watch it, that's fine. You watch this movie. If it's on at home, I'm just going to walk out or fall asleep or whatever.
Such a bad
but
movie.
I'm stuck there watching Avatar in 3D. It was miserable.
It's so terrible.
Yeah.
Don't worry, Braden. The sequels are not just Avatar in 3D. They're also going to be in high frame rate. That'll solve everything for you.
I think Braden and I are soulmates, I think.
Well, Ara, can you bring us home? What's been your theater story that makes you so glad you have a home theater instead?
Sure, nothing as interesting as your guys, but it was when I went to take my daughters to see Harry Potter. They were very young at the time. It was, I think, 2000. And when I paid for the 4 tickets and popcorn and other things at the snack bar, it cost me $75. And this was 2000. And I wasn't making nearly as much money as I made recently. But it was at that point I said, I think we can do better at home.
Mm. Yeah.
That is the worst, though. You go and pay. I got 5 kids, so I did it to myself. But I go and drop over $100 to go watch a movie. And you're leaving going, I just paid $100 to watch that.
Yeah.
That was
miserable. I've only got 3 kids, and I can't get out of there for less than $100. I don't know how you're doing it. I mean...
Well, it does make $30 from Mulan seem like quite the deal.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
That's exactly what we ended up looking at it. $30 divided by 4, not that I made my kids pay. They're older now, but they still live with me. You know, it's less than $15 a person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we had better food. And as I think Tom said, you can hit pause when it was time to go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm. So DJ had an idea. He has a segment in mind to wrap this all up, and it's a very appropriate segment. It's what we're thankful for about podcasts, because that's what's brought us all together, and he had something to share in mind. So DJ, take it away.
So yeah, what for everybody go around, like what are you thankful for podcasts and in general, or how it's affected society or affected you? And I have couple of examples. There's one, I'm sitting here tonight with you guys, and a year ago, I'm a listener. So like Lee started the show off saying, it's like watching R and Braden for the first time. It's like I'm in the front row, but I'm sitting with you guys. So that to me is amazing because it's not just you guys, but it's that you guys have been to me so welcoming. Right. And it's like, I reached out to each and every one of you and everybody was like, yeah, of course. Why not? There's no, Tom has said it so many times, there's no competition because our listeners, podcast listener is looking for more content of what, of a subject, whatever the subject is, right? And it's, you know, so the better podcasts out there are looking to share their content with other podcasts to grow. And you guys have been obviously awesome to me. I've only this just a year, and here I am sitting with all of you guys, and it's been amazing. But I would say, aside from myself alone, getting back to that cables thing and how Ara looked up Monster Cable. Seriously, I think podcasting is what changed that pricing because the knowledge that you guys bring is it's spreading, and people are realizing from listening to pod. If you care enough about your systems and stuff, you're now realizing that you don't need to spend the money. where we all spent the money because we cared so much about our system. We thought money means quality, right? So we just bought the best cable we could. But it's you guys' podcasts and other podcasts as well, educating people on where to put the money. And it's brought the market down. We all thought, like, when Ira looked up Monster, we thought it was going to be a crazy price. You guys have affected Monster. I mean, that's pretty huge.
All right.
Maybe.
You know?
I give some credit to Mono Price for having affected Monster.
I think I'd give the bulk of the credit to Mono Price.
No, I wouldn't, because you know why? I'll tell you why. Because the consumer would see the price of Mono Price and Monster and think Monster was better because it costs more money.
Yeah.
Too good to be true. Yeah.
You know, it's if you're uninformed, you don't know why would you buy Mono Price? It's so cheap. It can't be good.
Yeah,
it's
that's
cheap.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's your education is great.
I'll certainly say for a podcast for me that, you know, the format of AV Rant is answering questions, but in order to do that, you gotta research, you gotta be on top of things. And I, you know, Tom and I always say the two of us, we'd be talking to each other every week about home theater stuff anyway, just casually. If we weren't recording it and no one were listening, we're just into it. We're friends. It's a fun thing to do. It's a hobby, but. You know, having the podcast is what motivates me to stay right on the cutting edge of things as much as I'm able to. It motivates me to read manuals for products that I would not otherwise read. And, you know, the tidbits fall out there that I wouldn't have found otherwise. So, you know, I'm thankful for that because it encourages and keeps the interest in this topic going. I might have started to lose interest, or not just had it to the exact same degree that, we have. And I've podcasting to thank for that. So. I'm appreciative of that.
Yeah, Braden and I said the same thing. This is something that we would normally talk about anyway. And Braden, do you remember when we were both working at the same company? You came to my office because I had mentioned I had listened to The Daily Source Code by Adam Curry. And I was, you know, being a software developer, I was looking at the whole mechanism. And Braden and I were talking about it. And I think I just threw out there, we should do something on home theater because we both worked for Sony Pictures back in the day. And he went away. About an hour later, he comes into my office and he says, let's do it. And that was it. We did it. And we've worked at different companies, but we've always stayed in touch. And Braden, one of my closest friends, I've known probably only one other friend longer than you. But I appreciate Braden and the listeners, you guys as well. There was a time, Tom, remember we did a AV at night
dark?
Or something like that?
After dark.
Yeah. And at the time, you know, our lives were very busy. We couldn't keep that going, but it was a lot of fun too. The community is great. And as you said, Rob, it was DJ. There's no competition. Our listeners, there's a lot of crossover. We all do different things and we try to help each other out. So thankful for all you guys.
Yeah. And I'd echo those same kind of sentiments, Ara, is that the podcast has allowed us to stay, Ara and I connected, but us to be connected to Ara, you and I met when we were both working at Sony Pictures. We were in the theater kind of AV industry. Yeah. And since we've moved on to other industries, we, with the podcast, have been able to stay connected with friends that we have that are still at DTS and Dolby and other places. And then be able to tap into that sort of community of people who are just as weird and crazy about home theater as we are. That when you're out there hanging out, you know, walking through the mall or hanging out at work, it's rare to find someone who's as much of a home theater geek as those of us on this show. But with the podcast, we all get to stay connected and we get to kind of enjoy each other and learn from each other and grow from each other and really create like a community that, you know, without a podcast, there'd be no way to do it. Right. So I've really enjoyed that part of it.
I'll tell you what I love about podcasts. Two things. One, it improved my health. Podcasts did, because back in the 2000s, I started eating better. And then later in the 2000s, I started exercising. And I found that when I exercised, I got bored with the music. I felt too alone. If you're outside riding a bike or jogging or trying to lift weights, it's boring for me. I'm kind of a social creature. And so having podcasts, it just dawned on me one day, sometime around 2008, maybe 2009. I'm like, shouldn't there be podcasts about, I like electronics. Let's see what people are doing. Right. And so I went out and found, well, here they are. I'm talking to the people I found. So yeah. That's very cool. I don't know. It just made all that kind of activity better and I got healthier and it works, by the way. Eating right and exercising is a great thing. Radio. I used to do radio and I kind of missed them good old days, both for my own show I used to do and just because radio is so different now. There used to be a plethora of different personalities you could listen to, and I miss the different personalities and individuals. Now there's just like, you know, one DJ will be on 20 or 50 stations in a bunch of different cities and he's not live, and yeah. There's a handful of shows that are carried nationally, and it's just tremendously boring. And podcasts have moved into that, and now it can be on topics you want, and there's just endless personalities, and I'll almost listen to anything topic wise if I just like the people. So I just love all that about podcasts. I think it's one of the biggest changes to how we consume information in, I don't know, many, many years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome. That's like on-demand radio, basically.
Yeah, it really is. Basically. Any topic you want.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, it's very hard to go last in this particular segment since, you know, we're all kind of thankful for the same sorts of thing. I'm thankful for my community, the community of AV Rant listeners, that reach out to us every week asking us questions. Unlike just about everybody else who started in podcasting because they loved podcasting, I was never really one that liked podcasts all that much when I started this. I was suggested to start this by Clint DeBoer, who was the editor-in-chief at Audioholics at the time, thought it would be a good idea. Thought I had a good voice for it, perfect face for podcasting, as you can all see right here. So he thought that this would be a good fit. And we did all sorts of different things. You know, I started off with a couple of different female co-hosts, and we did the more news sort of stuff for a long time. And
oh my God, I remember that. Yeah. I completely forgot all of that.
That's right.
Oh my
Dina,
God.
Dina and then Liz. So, and then, you know, Rob came in. So it's, you know, our.
I scared all the women away. It's not a great legacy to have on
not,
that front.
Not the best wingman. I'm just going to let you guys know, if you're ever in the bar, just stay on the other side. Keep Rob on the one side and you go to the other side.
Are you talking the bar or the country?
Well, I mean, you know.
The border, man.
He's up in British Columbia and I'm in Florida. That should tell you something right there.
You can't be any further away.
Almost.
For a while I was in Australia. So, you know, I mean, I was really trying to get away at that point. But no, it's been great to have a community to reach out to and people that, you know, that are, you know, constant listeners. And even like this last when this podcast goes live a couple of weeks ago, we had a listener who hadn't listened in a while because he got his theater sorted out and didn't really need our help anymore. But he came back because he kind of missed, you know, our stories and hearing our voices and that sort of thing. And that just reminds me that it's all of our podcasts are more than just about AV and about home theater. We are, you know, keeping the community together, keeping the community alive, giving people, you know, a voice that maybe they're looking for information. Maybe they're just saying, hey, this is a 2-hour podcast. I bet I can fall asleep to this. And they're probably right. And that would be perfect.
And if you're
fine.
Still awake now, congratulations.
Congratulations. You win.
Okay. Yeah. We have blown through every barrier of times for any of our podcasts. Yeah.
So, like I said at the very beginning, I spent 8 years writing in the AV industry, and then that went away and I started doing other work, and I've been doing a lot of consulting and stuff like that. But I have a little announcement to make.
Oh, here we go.
All right. I have, I've partnered again with, my good friend Clint DeBoer, who's the former editor in chief of Audioholics, who's now the editor in chief of, Tool Review magazine. He has been, for a long time, he had a bunch of content, that was on a different website that was his, that he couldn't get access to. Well, he finally got access to it, and he's starting a new AV website, and he's asked me to be editor-in-chief of that website. So it's called avgadgets.com. It's live now. By the time you're hearing this on the podcast on Thanksgiving Day, I will hopefully have spent the last 2.5-3 weeks getting as much content up there as I possibly can. So I'm writing again in the AV industry. I'm very excited about it, and I ask you guys to all come over and take a look and see what kind of mischief I can get into, because if my interactions with NAD are any indication, there's going to be some companies that don't like me after I start writing about their their stuff. But we will. I'll try to keep it as simple as possible. So,
Congratulations. That's really cool.
Thank you, guys.
That's awesome.
You got to give that website one more time, Tom. Where can they find that?
AVGadgets.com. AVGadgets.com, all one word.
Be in the show notes, right, Rob?
Yeah, it'll be in the show notes.
It sure will. It will absolutely be in the show notes, awesome. Of course. I will say one thing that I'm very thankful for on this particular episode, and it's nothing that any of us could honestly control, but it's very helpful that you got six gentlemen around here all speaking sometimes over each other on this podcast, but we all have unique sounding timbres to our voices that make us, as a listener, you can tell who is who. There are some podcasts I listen to, I enjoy them very much, but sometimes the two or three hosts have very similar voices, and even after multiple episodes, I can't tell which one of them is speaking, so that worked out so swimmingly well for all of us. As much as I would assume that we have a lot of crossover listeners between our three podcasts, there's definitely the chance that some people are hearing some of us for the first time. So how can people get in touch with each of us? Want to make sure they have a way of being able to reach out and find our podcasts, find our websites, find our contact info. So DJ, how can people find you at the Brightside Home Theater Podcast?
All right. This timbre is DJ from Brightside Home Theater. You can find me on Twitter at BrightsideHT. You can email me at BrightsideHomeTheater@gmail.com, or you could just go to the website BrightsideHomeTheater.com, and everything's there, all the links to anything, my podcast, stuff like that.
All right. Tom, you're used to giving out our contact info. How the heck do people find AV Rant?
AV Rant is the podcast that answers your home theater and AV questions. To get your questions answered, all you have to do is ask. You ask by emailing us at question@avrant.com. You can go to...
Nice.
I was like, awesome. Wait a second.
This is what happens when we go over 2 hours.
I get tired.
It starts glitching.
You're doing it live.
Max Headroom.
So it's doing so good.
AVRant.com is our website. You can leave us a comment there. Facebook.com/AVRantPodcast. YouTube.com/AVRant for our out of lip sync videos that you can catch all those.
Oh, yeah.
You want to contact Rob directly. He's Rob@AVRant.com. His Twitter is @FirstReflect. I'm Tom@AVRant.com. My Twitter is @AVRant_Tom.
And our pinch hitter Lee can be found as well. Lee, where can
folks
find
this timbre
you?
Is Lee Overstreet, who used to be a DJ. You can find me at Lee Overtweet on Twitter.
I told you he likes
I do.
Puns,
Lee Overtweet. Get it? I'm so damn clever. And if you can follow the logic on that pun, you can find me on Instagram as well if you just kind of think it out. But find me there.
And the guys who started this whole podcast thing, we all kind of followed in their footsteps, the HT guys. Where can folks find you?
Well, you can find...
There you go.
Go ahead, Braden.
I think you should do it, man. Cause...
No, I didn't mean to step on your feet there. You go do
no,
it.
No, that's funny. So I'll do the first half. You do the second half. How about that?
They Sorry, are the no, old married
they
couple.
They really are.
Yeah, we are. Right? I mean, if we don't plan these things ahead of time, we're like all over the place and, you know, and I miss punchlines. All right. So the easiest place to go for all of our content is just go to the website, htguys.com. It hasn't changed in years and years and years. And that's the reason that we call the show HT Guys. It's the HGTV and home theater podcast. We talk about everything high def, home theater, a little bit of home automation, and just try to have fun with it. We're not funny, but we try to have fun. you can send us email htguys@htguys.com. And Aura, since you are the one who's super active on social media, you want to talk about our social contact info?
So you can find me on Twitter @HDTVPodcast. Braden is @BradenRussell. I do some woodworking that is available on Instagram. That's @OCReclaimedTreasures. And there I do build some speakers. In fact, by the time you've listened to this, I've put out a video on the latest ones that I built. So if you got a chance, go over to YouTube, and we are the HT guys there. I put up some videos from time to time. And, did you say Patreon, Braden?
No, but that's at the website. I figured the people just go to the website.
Yeah, patreon.com/HGTV podcast.
This has been a treat, for me, if no one else, but I'm pretty sure that all of us agree that we enjoyed it. I think all of us owe a big thank you to DJ for being the spearhead of this, really wanting, round of applause there for DJ, sir.
DJ,
thank you
thanks.
Very much. And I am
100% certain that we are all exceedingly thankful and grateful to all of our listeners.
Yes.
If we don't have listeners, what is a podcast for? It's tremendous, the community that that Braden and Ara and Tom and Lee and DJ and I have all spoken about. It's why we do this. It's wonderful, and we thank all of you so, so much for listening. This has been a wonderful experience. I do hope that we get to do it again. We do have to say, though, that for now, the multiverses are breaking apart. Come next week, we'll be back to individual episodes, but this has been Thankful on Infinite Podcasts. It has been our massive crossover event. We really hope that you enjoy it, and happy Thanksgiving, everybody. And so now it's time to close out the show. Braden, take it away.
Yeah, thank you, everybody, for listening. Now stay in and listen to something.
Go watch some HDTV.
And go push play.
And we'll see you next Thanksgiving.
Bye-bye.
I think we might.
Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey, Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.